Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff.
Lift off right into the end of 2012 and beginning of 2013. This is Weekend Confirmed, ready for your New Year's celebration. Hope you are prepped and ready. Hope you had a fantastic Christmas and are enjoying some post-holiday sales. Should be some great stuff out there on special. Lots of treats to pick up with your gift cards. Joining me are, in this first segment, Mr. James Stevenson.
Hey, hey, this is a weird sense of deja vu.
It's like it's the same show all over again.
If we just carried over our drunkenness level. It's like
we did.
We checked our save file from last week, and we are right
elevating
back into it.
We are elevating it. Load, game, continue, yes.
What if you could do that? What if you could save your drunkenness, and then like 2 weeks later, you go to a party. Yeah, and you just pull it back in, and you're like, I'm right back where I was.
Without having to spend all that extra money and calories, it'd be
right,
perfect.
It'd be great.
Andrea Renee and Mike Schramm right there, of course.
Hello.
Hi. I'm thrilled to be sitting next to Andrea.
Well, I have to say, if he didn't mention it the last time he was on the show, Mike has his own really fantastic podcast, The Incredible Podcast of Amazing Awesomeness. And if you guys haven't listened to it, it's really great. So I know he's very humble about it. But
thank you very much. She joined me, but we haven't done a podcast like live in person next to each other.
The Incredible Podcast of Amazing Awesomeness. Very humble.
Yeah, we just had to go a little low with the name. We didn't want to
lo-fi.
We didn't want to go too much.
I feel you.
You didn't brag too much.
I feel you.
And I've got Andrew Yoon over here, who you need to introduce.
Andrew Yoon at the end of the table, holding it down, senior editor for ShackNews.com.
And the last time I saw Mike Schramm, we were on like a really romantic date together.
Well,
that is neither here nor there. We're former coworkers over on Joystick together. So there was no denial. The feelings, it's true. Where do we go? Tegeen. We went to Tegeen.
Ryan
Galling owns the restaurant. And I happened to have a meal at Tegeen, and Andrew Yoon decided to join me. And we just went and had a good time. What? And what?
You have a couple of bottles of wine?
We had one.
One.
And some sangria. What?
Some candlelight.
Well played. All right, so we did not in the last show, which you probably heard, the holiday special, get to a lot of Game of the Year stuff. And we had a great deal of debating that over pizza and with more whiskey. And so we thought we'd just continue that right over and go right into Game of the Year deliberations, because it was an excellent year for 2012. And I don't think that we're ready yet. Obviously, Shack News has a whole process. Actually, if you haven't followed Shack News before, we're doing the annual thing that we do where all of the editors contribute their top 10 list. We use a weighted score system, and we attempt to arrive at a Game of the Year. And so there's
good luck.
Consensus.
There's some consensus that goes in there. And the other thing that's great about this is that it brings out each of the editors' ability to talk about the games that they loved, because we do cover all of those in the run-up to it. And it eliminates all of the whole, like, oh, we're going to give an award to everything so that everything under the sun gets an award for something. Oh, here's a little star for you. Joey, you made a nice game. I don't know.
I don't think anybody really does that anymore,
but I do think
as much as I like game trailers, have you seen the game trailers awards list? It is like...
Yes, I have.
It's like a shopping list for Santa Claus of awards.
Well, not necessarily, but we're not talking about game trailers. I want to remind people, in case they forgot, that you guys really, you know, bucked the trend last year and chose The Witcher 2.
I forgot that.
You forgot that.
You bucked the trend so much you don't even remember bucking.
There's a lot of comments that called you out. You didn't remember any of those either?
Oh, no. What?
That's weird.
I don't remember anything.
You're
it's like
being
someone
facetious.
Hit me in the face with a break.
Andrew, back me up here.
I mean, The Witcher 2 was a great choice, and hopefully we'll have something as controversial.
You know what's funny is Ariel actually just started playing The Witcher 2 this last week.
It's a great game. It's a really good game.
It actually is a really great game, and I was really happy about that. It's really interesting when you're looking at a weighted scoring system like that to watch all the scores come in, and what's going to happen is that the game that takes first place most likely will have a predominance of first place votes, but it's second and third and fourth places where it starts to get more interesting.
When you say weighted, what do you mean?
I mean that
like first place votes worth 10 points and the second place votes worth 9 points.
Okay.
So each vote, the higher are you up the list, the more points you get. Yep. So.
Okay, got it.
So there's a good deal of debate that also goes in there as well, and there's a lot of discussion about it. It fosters a really good, rich discussion about the games, which is what we can have here.
So do you want to actually choose a game of the year on this podcast right now?
No, I don't think we're going to be able to do that.
We don't have enough Shaq News people here to do that, right? Yeah.
I don't know if Weekend Confirmed will wind up with a game of the year. I think you'll know at the end of a show sometime in January and February. You'll know you'll know what my choice and Jeff's choice and probably Andrea and James's and Andrew's and Jeff Mattis's choices are, and Mike Schramm if he comes back. But I don't think we'll wind up with...
If he's still alive after the world
ends.
That's
right, after the world ends.
Because I was going to throw it off and say PuzzleCraft for iOS game of the year, period.
Really?
Hands down.
No,
so, you know
what,
after your recommendation,
whatsoever.
Actually, I played PuzzleCraft, and I got bored with it pretty quickly.
Oh.
How dare you. Get off your own show. Why did you get bored with it?
I think that the matching system, which was interesting in that I was like trying to gather resources. So the way PuzzleCraft on iOS works is that it's a city building sort of sim where you are laying out pieces of your town, each of which contributes resources to various resource silos. But the way you build your resource silos is through a match game.
Like
a puzzle game where you're like, it's a match three, but it's more than match three. The idea is to match many, many of each type. And some types of matches, if you match enough of them, generate a then second higher tier of matchable
items. As you progress in the town, the match game also changes and kind of grows and things like that. So,
it got repetitious to me. It got repetitious. Right. You know, like, I've done the match game.
That's fair. But my point is that these game of the year things are so crazy because everybody has their own things that they jump towards, and that's one that I love and no one else has sort of caught up with.
Well, that goes back to my whole thing about, do you want to marry it or do you want to just like bang it tonight?
No, I want to marry. I'm just going to shout on this podcast right now. PuzzleCraft, please, will you marry me? Because will you make me the happiest man in gaming?
So. For 99 cents? Sure, why not?
Andrea and James, their favorite game is tic-tac-toe. What are you guys playing over there?
We're not playing tic-tac-toe. No.
I think what we'll do today, right now, in this show, like in this segment, let's do three games that we would hope to be considered best game of the year.
Can I say five? I had five prepared.
I think three to
per
start
person,
with.
Per person, that's 15 games.
Yeah. Okay, you get three, but you get five if two of them are Insomniac games.
Yes.
Yes.
Did Insomniac have two games this year?
Count out or not?
Out or not, yeah.
She like
those are games.
Whoa! She cannot stop laughing at that.
Someone doesn't like the Facebook.
Clearly,
games.
You didn't buy enough time on Machinima this month.
No. Oh. Facebook games to me are in their own category. I have not seen a Facebook game.
They go to their own bathroom.
That even is considered for
hang
game
on,
of
hang
the
on,
year.
Hang on. Do you really
the closest
think that?
Thing was maybe Monsters. Because I love Monsters.
Wait, but here's the question. We talked about, and I do want to get to all the game of the year before I get out of here, but we talked about handheld in the last show, and one thing that I want to bring up that I didn't get a chance to is on joystick, the one game I thought competed for game of the year last year was Jetpack Joyride, and nobody jumped on it. Like, nobody picked any mobile games. Like, even you guys picked The Witcher 2 and, like, didn't look that closely at mobile games. This year, I think it was Destructoid that chose Super Hexagon, which is a mobile game.
Yes, it did.
Picked,
yeah.
It's a really excellent game.
Which
but
I talked about as an overlooked game of last year.
And I might be a day late and a dollar short, but I kind of think Punch Quest is in there for me.
Punch Quest is a really great game. I mean, there's a lot of great games on iOS this year, but my question... In all this Game of the Year discussion, I haven't seen a lot of that stuff jump up either. Like, it's all been Dishonored. Even downloadable games are starting to pick up. But handheld
all right, you
and
Skechers,
mobile games.
Let's get some of the way. Okay. Let's get some games thrown out there. Andrew right. Yoon, one of your top three games.
Well, I'm going to say Old Spice saves the world. No, seriously.
Cheers to that. Adam Atomic did a great job for Old Spice.
It is timely.
Are you really being serious?
Yeah, no, it's timely. The writing is terrific. The way it draws into the community. Yes, it's an advert game, but you know what? I would buy that game. I would gladly pay $15 for that game.
This is the we're in the Twilight Zone.
Would you buy
Old Spice game of the year?
I really don't know if you're trolling us or if you're actually being serious.
I mean, did you play it?
I have not.
Well, there you go.
But you did say Old Spice as the first words out of your mouth.
It's a game. It's an advert game that's made by the guy that made Cannonball.
I know it.
Like, they know what they're doing, and I haven't played it either, but apparently Andrew thinks it's cool.
The mechanics especially in the later episodes, could use some work.
Later so episodes. Not Game of the Year, then?
No, we're
could
not
use some work doesn't qualify.
We're not talking
well,
about
he did, he, that wasn't what his pick was. It was in his top three.
Go ahead. Okay, we can't have a lot of discussion around
that.
So,
my bad,
James, one of your top threes.
God, I had a five ready. I'll put XCOM.
XCOM.
As one of the top three.
All right, so give me the pitch.
The pitch for XCOM is in a
and why world why of, for you it's set I should say the pitch is why for you it's in your top three there.
In a world where strategy games are no longer
in a world where strategy
in
games
in a world where strategy games are no longer one of the important genres,
turn-based
a publisher defies expectations
one
and brings
publisher
out a
defies
turn-based
expectations.
Yeah.
You should use the council voice, actually. That's hard.
The council is very disappointed in your actions, Andrew. The world is going to hell quickly. No, it's fantastic. It's, you know, it's streamlined. It took what was great about XCOM, and it managed to make that relevant to today's audience. And I think that's what it does so fantastically well. If you want a game that is a little more thoughtful, a little more slow-paced, but very addictive. It takes the great things about, even like their civilization games at Firaxis, like it takes their games and says, one more turn, just one more week, just one more battle. And you sit there and you think you've played for an hour and you're 3 hours in to, you know, this. And it's absolutely unbelievable in how good it is on that front. And I think it's just, it's so against what everything else is right now. It's not a instant satisfaction game. It is a long-term satisfaction game, and for those reasons it's nice to see someone go back to that genre and prove that genre can be successful and do it very, very well. With
anyone want to counterpoint it?
No, he's right on.
So we have a lot of consensus around XCOM.
I mean, I think you know, like you said, it sort of goes against grain in terms of, you know, that instant gratification, but on the other hand, it's actually surprisingly accessible. The original XCOM is known as this like hardcore beast of a, you know, strategy game, but you can play the console game with a controller.
I actually think it's better with a controller.
I also
than it
think
is
so
keyboard
as well.
And mouse.
You know, because using Q to rotate the camera left is really weird. Yeah. But yeah, it's accessible. Like, yeah.
So you say there's no gratification to it. I think there's a tremendous amount of gratification. I think there's a lot of that's what I'm saying. I think there's a lot of instant gratification when you see your character every moment, every turn. There are combat resolutions with real impact, and almost every turn you see characters living or dying by the outcome of what happens in that moment, and that is very instant gratification.
Not unless you're inching forward constantly on Overwatch.
Well, and
I
think you're right in those actual combat moments when a bunch of mutants have rushed you, but in like the sitting there watching the thing, building stuff, choosing with research, there isn't actually there's certainly moments where there's a lot of quick gratification, but there's certainly a lot of moments in the game where there isn't much gratification.
Also, it's like one of the games that I can't play with my friends around because it's just so boring for them to watch. You know?
Like, oh my God, are you going back to the lab again?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
are you doing?
Yeah, well, strategy games in general are like a solitary experience. You know what I mean?
They're not like as openly competitive. I do think that what XCOM does, though, is that it tells you that you need to wait and think about the next move that you're making. Like, that's the key in all turn-based strategy games is you don't make a move unless you're sure that you will succeed in that move. And so it very clearly, like, if you make wrong moves in XCOM, if you don't think about what you're doing, you die right away. And the game very clearly gives you that feedback of, like, you did this wrong. You need to go back and do it over again. So I think any game where a character dies and stays dead forever deserves, you know, that is as successful as XCOM was, like, deserves to be honored.
And by the way, sure. Iron Man is kind of awesome. I know people will be like,
you've been playing it, right?
That's why I'm playing it. I'm playing it Iron Man, and despite the people who thought I might not like it like that, like, it's great, actually, because it's the exact opposite for me of what you might have expected. Because of the fact that it is an indelible decision, I'm okay with it. It's like, okay, someone died. You know what?
For people that don't know what Iron Man is, this is not the Robert Downey Jr. movie. It's just a mode where it automatically saves after every decision you make.
Yeah, and when people die, they die. And while it might upset me for a moment, it's really, really easy to let go, actually, because it's like, You know what? There is no option. The option is go back to 8 hours ago and start the game over again, or just keep going. And I'm going to keep going.
The,
you know
the what else that's like? Of course, you can lose in Iron Man. And like really,
you
really
can
lose.
You can lose, but you know what? This is one of those cases actually where people have been talking about. Like we've had a lot of threads about. Oh, the experience of playing the game is the fun part of it. Like the experience of playing it in Iron Man really is the fun part of the game.
Yep. And I'm totally okay with starting over from the beginning. It's you know, because it has random elements. You know, sort of like roguelike. Ish elements, you know,
for sure.
Mike, one of the games in your three.
I'm gonna go. Well, part of me wants to talk about Diablo 3, but Kanata, I think, already mentioned that. And that's
no, this
game.
is your time, brother.
I think Diablo 3 is amazing, and I think it's great. But I'm going to actually choose Spelunky, which I think we haven't talked much.
Wow,
about. Spelunky!
I'm waiting for someone to bust out Cave Story.
Oh, Cave Story is good too, but Spelunky is, I think, probably the most core game that I've seen this year, like in that it's a real video game. It's a platformer, it's a strategy game, it's a role-playing game. It's such a brilliant combination of all these different types of things that we love about video games. And I don't know if I'd recommend it for everyone because it is frustrating and it is mean and like it's very difficult and it sort of beats you over the head with how bad you are at it. But it's so core, like it's so it uses all these things that we love so much about games, which is like, you know, wandering through a randomized dungeon and saving, you know, trying to save as many things as you can and doing the best as you can, and then when your game is over you have three lives and that's it. When those lives are gone, that's the end of it. So yeah, I really love Spelunky, and I don't think it's gonna be passed over necessarily in game of the year discussions. I've seen it pop up a few times, but I think that it's been a game a long time coming, and we finally saw a really great release of it on XBLA specifically, and it's just a terrific game. It's one of my favorite games of the year for sure.
And like XCOM, it has that appeal where it's like, yeah, it's super hard, but like you just want to keep on going back to it.
Right, and the thing about Spelunky is that, and this is true for XCOM too, it's hard, but when you mess up, it's not because the game did it wrong or the game didn't do what you wanted it to do. It's that you did the wrong thing. You made the mistake. Like when you fall off a cliff, you are the one who sent your guy forward when you shouldn't have sent your guy forward. So, and as a gamer, like, again, I don't know if I could like pass that like journey I could give to a friend and say, you've got to play this and experience this and check this out. I couldn't do that to a Spelunky for someone who doesn't usually play games. But as a gamer, as someone who's played games for years and years and years, I appreciate that. Like a game that takes me on its own terms, and then when I succeed, rewards me on my own terms. Like that's really impressive and that's really cool. So I really am a big fan of Spelunky. I don't know if that's my top, but that's the one that I'll pick to talk about because I don't think we've mentioned it too much here yet. So,
Andrea, one of your three.
One of my three most certainly has to be Borderlands 2. And I know that I talked about this game a lot, and I am maybe my own worst critic on my own opinion of the game, because when you think about Borderlands compared to Borderlands 2, they're very similar in a lot of ways, maybe too many ways. It's almost like the criticisms you hear about Call of Duty going, oh, it's the same game 2.0. It's a DLC for the main game. And those criticisms are fair when it comes to Borderlands 2. They didn't really do anything dramatically different with the game the gameplay or anything really revolutionary that was like, wow, this is so significantly different than the original. But I think that they put out a really highly polished version of what they did in the first. And I don't think there's anything wrong with putting out another really awesome game that's super fun to play, something that's really great co-op experience, one of the best co-op gaming experiences there is in games, and I feel confident saying that, and also something that keeps you coming back. I mean, Gearbox is a company that really does a great job with additional content or DLC. Yeah. And a lot of games, when you get DLC, you feel like it's something that should have been included in the main game. That's just an add-on, a way for them to get extra money out of you or to keep you playing. And in Borderlands, I really feel like they add to the world. They add a new environment, a new character, and then you get new guns. And then with the Necromancer class that they added, and a lot of really great things. And I just had a really, really enjoyable time playing that. And I know that in a previous episode of We Can Confirm, I said it's almost perfect. And I have to, you know, say after many hours of gameplay, let's be honest, the game's not perfect. And I can say, you know, looking back at my first statement, that was after only like 10 to 12 hours of gameplay. And now after 50, 60 hours of gameplay, I can say, you know, I can see the flaws and where the flaws are. But at the end of the day, I still think it's a really well-built game. I think it's a really fun, enjoyable experience, and they continue to support it. And the shift code thing, as frustrating as it is that I can't be on my Xbox to put those shift codes in, it's a really, really great marketing scheme, and it's a really great way for them to draw you back into the game.
It's a great player attention scheme.
Yeah. And it's a reward, right? They're saying, hey, log in, and we'll give you a reward for doing it. So I really, really enjoyed that game, and I really suggest it's on sale on Steam right now for 50% off in the Steam Winter Sale. So if you guys haven't played it yet and you're a Steam user, I highly recommend download it.
Is the sale going to be valid by the time the show's on air?
Yeah, I want to ask you.
I want to ask you about the tone of the second game versus the first one, because I thought that that is what they nailed on the second game.
The writing and the comedy.
Irreverent and ridiculous and hilarious.
On the first one, I feel like it was very much an experiment. Like, they kind of had this idea to do a Diablo-style shooter game.
Yeah, I agree.
And,
it
was almost campy, right?
Right, yeah. But the second one, I feel
it's still campy.
Well, right, but they nailed down what they were looking for. Like, the first one, I feel like they were experimenting, and the second one, they were like, this is Borderlands. This is what
Here's the brilliance that I'm just starting to unveil of Borderlands 2 is that, to me, it really is that game, like Diablo 2, that can sink its hooks deeper and deeper in me. And the way I say that,
careful.
And the reason I say that is that Diablo 2 was a game that I spent ridiculous amount of time in, and it really came into its own. I found, and I started to understand in second playthrough and third playthrough, and I had zero intention of doing a second playthrough of Borderlands 2, and that was stupid. Because True Vault Hunter mode, which I only knew about because Ariel and I conquered Borderlands 2, went right into the DLC, played through both DLC packs, and we're like, wow, this is weird that nothing's going up, because we hadn't done any, like, we didn't pay attention to anything. And what you're supposed to do is go do a True Vault Hunter mode restart, which is to start the game over after having finished it once. It's kind of like New Game Plus.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to have done that, which unlocks leveling stuff over level 30. And we hadn't done that, and then we figured it out, and then we started playing, and now we're playing without even having thought about it. We're playing through a second time because it's so much more fun to play through the second time, because the game is in this really, really good groove of hitting the sweet spot of balance between the enemies using a lot of the elemental attacks that you had throughout the first game that you realized, like, why does no one slag me? Why does no one hit me with elemental damage? Well, now they do. And now they actually use some tactics. And so it really brings everything up to a higher level. Plus, the gear that you're getting is so much better that the addictive nature of Borderlands 2 is really coming through to me. And so that's, like, this whole conversation I've been having in the last show and this show about, like, the one you want to sleep with tonight versus the one you want to marry is my whole difficulty trying to come to terms with Game of the Year. Because for some reason, I feel like I shouldn't be thinking Borderlands 2 is my game of the year because I don't want to marry her. But at the same time, like, that's the game I want to play every night.
Games aren't like girls. You can sleep with as many as you want all the time.
And yet, at the same time, like, Guild Wars 2 is the cuddle pillow that I want to curl up at night with every night. So I want to curl up with Guild Wars 2. I want to sleep with Borderlands 2. And then, like, I'd like to marry Dishonored.
Well, come on, listen. I don't think that we should count out a game just because it isn't doing something super revolutionary. And this was a conversation we had in the last episode that we were on that we got into with James, which I don't want to reignite because it got really heated. But what I want to say is that, you know what? And the people at Gearbox will probably say, hey, why are we being put down because we put out a great game, but just because it wasn't something really
Chris
hot
Failer.
New.
I pretty much blame Chris Failer.
I just think that it was a really, really well-built game. It's funny. There's great characters. There's so much replayability. And you can do it with your friends. I just, like, to me, it's just a really, really fantastic gaming experience. And I really hope that people give it a chance if they've never played it.
Maybe it's not like girls. You can do it with your friends.
At the same time. With up to four people, actually.
I've done that before. Wow. What do you mean?
Oh, excuse me. Oh,
I'll darn it.
Nothing new there.
All right, so now we have five.
Odd, right? It is odd to be, like, in that philosophical, and I'm trying to make light of it, but the philosophical dilemma is I really respect the IP approach of Dishonored, and I really love the diversity of play that was so important to the way they designed it. Of, like, you want to play stealth? You can play stealth. You want to play full guns? You can play full guns. You want to go between the two? You can go between the two.
Yeah, but they very clearly punish you if you go one way or the other. Yeah,
they do and don't. I mean,
if you're good, I don't think so.
To me, Dishonored is my game of the year.
You said that, yeah.
And I said in the last episode.
Did you finish it?
I finished it.
And so the endings and all that was not so disappointing to you.
the ending might have been disappointing, but that game so much to me is the journey and the moment to moment, and it is a game. I think
Mass Effect.
Well,
sorry.
We'll get to. We'll get to Mass Effect, but I think the challenge of Dishonored, and I think a lot of people may miss it, and maybe in similar ways that you kind of miss Borderlands the first time through, is Dishonored is such a game where if you just hack and slash your way through it, you will never understand why it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's a game where you really, and it doesn't really teach you that you probably should just save a lot and reload your save when you screw up and accidentally set off the alarm instead of hacking your way through, because you can get through a lot of the game when you screw up by hacking your way through. But the true beauty of it is when you actually take a step back, try and figure out how to do it better, try and figure out how to do it with stealth, try and figure out how to do it without killing anyone. And when you play the game that way, like just the depth of that design is so, so good. And there's so many options. And I'm really still floored by just how good it is for a new IP.
I haven't played Dishonored, and I really am looking forward to it. I have to get it done before the game of the year, you know, all of our game of the year discussion, everything. But don't you think that a game where you have to actually go back and reload a save is missing something? Like, if you have to go out of the game to do that type of stuff to really find the depth of it, shouldn't they have designed a better way to do that?
No, you don't have to.
You
do
don't
that.
Have right. to. You can yeah. fight your way through it. I just think that. And see, I think that's a challenge.
So, Mike, I'm actually the other side of the coin. I actually like the game for the other reason. I like the game for the fact that if I fuck it up, it's okay.
You can go back and do it. But it's not built
into the
game.
I don't have to. I'm cool with that. I don't go back and reload. I just keep going. Okay. And I love that it doesn't punish me. I love that I can go, oh, you know what? Should I screw it up? You know what? It's all right. Because I can kill my way out of this. And even more so, I can reestablish stealth if I'm good about it. And get back on track.
Yeah. It's really difficult to do that. We were talking about this in the break, actually, when we were in the, when we were talking about it in the last episode, how I am going high chaos the entire playthrough. And about halfway through, I was like, okay, maybe I don't want to be high chaos. But now I've killed too many people that I can't go back. Like, it's too challenging for
me to
try to do
it. So your history matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And it's frustrating. But I think I agree with James when he says that it shows a deep level of design in saying there's these different paths you can choose, and it's up to the player to decide how you want to do it. And as you said, you don't have to go back, but as he said, he's like, well, I want to do it the right way and I want to go back.
Well, I'm talking about within mission now. On a macro level, where you're talking about, yeah, I mean, there is a point in time that you've established enough reputation that there are things that you're not going to be able to
or
overcome.
Your reputation's so bad. I mean, yeah. I managed to bring my high down at first, because the first couple missions is high, I brought it down. But going
go
to
ahead.
Your point,
sure, yeah.
You said, you know, it sucks that you have to reload a save to get your stealth back, but on the flip side, like, I like that they don't force you to do that. Because, you know, a lot of games, like, you have that stealth sequence where if you fail, it's like game over. And that
like
gets so
frustrating.
Snake!
Yeah.
Snake!
It gets so frustrating so quick. Because you're like, if you just mess it up a little bit, you kill the person, you're like, okay, I'm good now. And that happened to me a lot in Dishonored. I was trying to play stealthy. I'd mess one person up. I'm like, it's not worth reloading over just killing this guy really quick. But other times, it would be really bad. There'd be 10 guys. The alarm would be going off. I'd be like, all right, I'll just die or I'll reload. But at least I had the choice in all of those matters. And I do think it kind of sucks because a lot of people are trained to play it combat heavy. You play so many shooters combat heavy, and you may rush through and miss all the depth there is to allow you to play it stealth heavy. And I think that's where the game truly sinks.
I'm only playing devil's advocate here. I'm sure Dishonored's a great game, and again, I need to play it more before the year ends. But that's really my problem with stealth games, is that I do understand there's a lot of fun there to be had, and there's a lot of cool gameplay design to be had. But any game where you can screw it up even if it lets you go forward, you've still lost that stealth element. And I haven't found a good way that, like I was looking at Mark and the Ninja today. It's available on sale right now.
It's definitely a contender. It's a
and
great
that's
game.
One that really does stealth, you know, in a very good way, I think. But even that kind of depends on if you get seen, that's kind of the end, and you kind of have to figure out what to do from there. So that's all.
Well, I mean, the problem is that when we play these stealth games, we're trying to, through a 2D window pane, whether it be a 3D rendered world or just a flat world, convey peripheral vision.
Right.
Somehow, like, give
distance,
you
have no idea when you're not.
It's and like, so it's got to be artificial.
Right. And they're clumsy in general, right? Games are not they're a clumsy tool in terms of your interface to a controller to do something. So,
which is why Uncharted 2 is actually still one of my favorites.
Going back to Uncharted.
No, we're talking about 2012, Andrew.
But I just need to throw that out. Uncharted 2 is one of my top
games of the year, 2012.
James Heard.
So, Andrew, what's another of your games for 2012?
You don't know Jack?
Really?
No way!
Which version? First of all, hang on.
Andrew's just like the knuckleball pitcher.
Well, you
throwing junk.
You chose XCOM. We're going to talk about Journey. I mean,
you don't have an iPhone, so it's not the iPhone version. It's the Facebook version.
It's the Facebook version. Jeez. It's the greatest Facebook game ever.
But that game is not doing anything new from what You Don't Know Jack hasn't already done.
But it incorporates the Facebook elements in such a way that
dis
like,
or dat.
It is...
I will agree with you in that it does bring your friends in a really cool way. Like, you play the game and your friends will, you'll show up in your friend's game. So it does do that really in a really interesting way.
I think.
Yeah, but every other Facebook game does that.
I think it incorporates your friends in a new, much more nuanced
First of all, talk on the mic there, buddy.
It's a much more nuanced way than. There you go. I wanted to address the mic right in front of me. I had to lean back
because I was so frustrated that you picked this as one of your top three games of the year.
No, we're just talking about three games that are the within that top. I don't think it's
so. You heard it here, Shaq means game of the year.
Maybe I'm confused. I thought we were picking our top three games.
I think he's confused.
Well, actually, Old Spice is in my top three. I'm not backing away from that. But, and XCOM is my number one.
Oh, wait, I see Ariel. I just wanted to wave.
Hey. Ariel's here? Oh, awesome.
Okay, continue talking about Facebook games.
No, I
want to
know is if that's the muffin top, what's in the stump?
I think You Don't Know Jack does, it actually makes me want to play a Facebook game, which pretty much no other Facebook game. Sorry,
you haven't played Monsters?
Sorry, Outer Now.
You didn't play Pixel Junk's Monsters on Facebook?
Pixel Junk Monsters on Facebook is terrible. It's a bad game.
Wow.
That's blasphemy,
it is.
Sir.
It's a bad game.
I have to disagree. It's not bad.
Also,
it's
not as bad as Outer Knots.
Outer Knots is better now.
Outer Knots got a lot better, but, you know, first impressions, unfortunately, make a really big impact. Pixel Junk Monster Social is a really bad adaptation of it, which, once again, does all the things that Facebook games, what makes Facebook games so annoying, like, Pixel Junk does that, and that frustrates me as a gamer. You Don't Know Jack doesn't. You Don't Know Jack is so approachable in the way it very, where it integrates your friends list without bombarding them.
It's true. That is good. It is friendly.
It gives you constant reward for coming back.
Yes, it does.
And the asynchronous multiplayer it just works. You know, you don't have to send invites to players.
Would I be off saying that you applaud it for its social design being more progressive than just reaching into your friends list and bombing them over and over and over?
Exactly. It's a game that uses Facebook in a way that gamers can appreciate it. And I think we should stop dismissing Facebook as a platform. I think it's definitely the future of games.
I agree. I don't know about it being the future of games,
no,
but it's definitely
or at least
one
it is a future.
That.
It's definitely a platform. I mean, I think a lot of the attitude that we have as gamers on Facebook right now is similar to the attitude we had when, you know, iPhone launched. You know, these shitty 99-cent games, they're not going to capture our attention. You're actually making iPhone games now. I mean, that's what happened over 5 years, all right?
All right.
And here's the problem, though. I'm going to just...
I think he was pointing at
me. I don't
mean
to, cut you off, but, the problem is that I have yet to see a Facebook game that is more than just a port of something else we've already seen.
Okay, that opens a whole can of worms that I'm not willing to open right. Let me do this. I think that Mr. Jeff Cannata probably wants to hop in here because I know he has a lot of game of the year things he'd like to talk about.
And Mike and I are heading out. So this
are you
is
really?
Us for the
thank you very much,
year.
Everyone.
Thanks
yeah, Andrew.
Us.
I was going to say before parting we move shots, on, next on your top three list are you Farmville 2? It's weird.
Oh. Shut up! Just, I had nothing written on there of such things. I've never even played Farmville.
Mike, you have a parting shot before you and I head out.
Oh no! I just want to say thanks very much for having me on the holiday show. It's been a lot of fun here, and enjoy your New Year's, and I hope everyone has a great 2013.
And you have a couple games in the iOS store, do you not?
In the App Store?
That's
yes,
right.
He does.
I personally do. There's one free that I'll mention called Benediction if you haven't played it. Go check that out.
Benediction.
It's completely free.
And Mike will be back during January, hopefully, sometime.
Hopefully, yeah. Let me know.
I mean, if you release them on Facebook, they're not real games. So
I didn't say that.
Oh,
I just said they're ports, okay?
Yeah, they're ports. Sorry.
Well, I just want to say
James,
thank you for having me all year. And
thanks,
it's
man.
It's been a fun year, and I look forward to a great 2013. And I'm sorry to bail now. I will say that I did think it was a great year for downloadable games.
Definitely.
In my top five, I would say there's three big downloadable games in Journey, Walking Dead, and Fez that I think all deserve.
I don't think there's any disagreement.
No.
All deserve credit up in the top game of the year, and I'm sure you guys will talk about some of those in the next segment. And then one last honorable mention that I haven't played enough of to put into my top five yet, but I think it could get there based on my first few hours, is Far Cry 3. Absolutely fantastic. And if you haven't played that yet, you should probably check it out, because that is quickly climbing my list.
All right, everybody, stick around. We have quite a bit more to go as Weekend Confirmed gets you ready to kick off 2013. Let it be said that we do not get you ready for your New Year's Eve bass bins there on Weekend Confirmed. All right, we're back. Jeff Cannata here on my left side now. Jason Paul back.
Good evening.
Christian Spicer.
Hello, I have a lollipop in my mouth.
And, is that what you're going to call that? And then two Jeffs, Jeff Mattis on the other end of the table.
Yeah, that's me.
All right, so you guys were in the booth listening. We were talking a lot about game of the year stuff. We're doing like your three games. I know Jeff Cannata was probably chomping at the bit. Jeff,
I was.
You had one you were like dying to talk about, which was...
Well, I agreed with a lot of what was said about XCOM.
Okay.
Which I think is probably my game of the year.
Really?
Probably.
Okay.
Here's one that I bet no one else will bring up, but I can't not bring it up.
Okay.
Because for me, it is in the discussion. It's probably in my top three. Diablo 3.
I would say it's a safe bet, actually. That's not going to probably come up in a lot of our discussions. Okay, so how does it not get avoided by you?
It is because of the pure amount of time and fun I got out of it.
So the Borderlands
and got out.
My Borderlands 2 argument.
Indeed. It delivered on a pure, wonderful gameplay loop that I found to be absolutely addictive and did not want to stop. And there's nothing about that game I didn't like. As much as people dog it now for the auction house and all the stuff about it.
But no, I mean, I didn't like the end game, though. I mean, you loved the game, but remember you getting frustrated with, now why are you playing? I'm not saying it shouldn't be a top contender, but I think to say there's nothing you...
After 100 hours into it,
which is great. That's a great game.
But I did, at a certain point, go, well, I guess I'm done with this. But I didn't want to be done with
it. That's a testament to how good it is that you were like, well, shit,
now,
I guess.
Now, did you play the Torchlight 2s, and how did
I
you...
I did.
How would you...
That's
sort
the
of
question, right?
How, the would
you,
experience
how would you... See, Torchlight 2 is an excellent game as well, and excellent in interestingly different ways. And but I didn't find... The thing that Diablo 3 brings to the equation that I found so wonderful in relation to Diablo 2 and the Torchlights is... The way the skill system worked to allow for myriad different builds that were all feasible.
Okay.
And that creativity and that the allowance for different takes on how to build your character, and there wasn't just the one best way to do it, that it was really about gameplay style, it was about fun, different variations on a theme, that I think changed the way I played those kinds of games and made it so much more fun. Every time I got a new skill, it was fun experimenting with that skill. And then at endgame, when all the skills are already open, there were multiple builds that would be useful in different situations. And the fact that you could swap in and swap out of them at any time made for a whole lot of fun that usually those games don't have.
So from a player's standpoint who's been into action RPGs for a long time, you liked the way they elected to go with the skill system and the tree system, despite the fact that some people would say that it was too simplified and it was like too much like, oh, well, I can just plug stuff in. I don't have to make choices.
Yeah, I think for those people.
As opposed to a Torchlight, because Torchlight makes you make a lot of choices.
And those choices are really meaty and interesting. And I found myself, every time I leveled up in Torchlight 2, I would sit there and go, ooh, where do I put? There were so many places to put points in that skill system. But that diversity
gives you so much to play with.
Indeed. But I found the fact that I could swap in and swap out of the skill sets in Diablo to be so much more interesting because it allowed for a – it's a more of a palette, and I can paint however I choose rather than committing to a certain play style and going deep down that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. I could – it was more of a sandbox. It was more of a creative experience, and that's what I'm always drawn to with games.
Christian Spicer, you were sitting in the booth as well. What was one of the ones you didn't hear that you were like, what are you guys – you're not thinking about this one?
Well, it got mentioned, but I don't think as Mark of the Ninja.
All right.
In terms of, like,
it
was a great year for downloadable games. And so that came up because there were so many great downloadable games. And Mark of the Ninja, I think.
What stuck with you about Mark of the Ninja?
The reinvigoration of stealth, where I feel like a lot of people had felt stealth gameplay was kind of over and kind of tried, and Splinter Cell's trying to reinvent itself and do different stealth. And here was a 2D stealth game. Like, that's not going to – I'm going to feel like a ninja. It hit so many of the right notes where it was challenging, but it made sense. It controlled well. It was engaging. And, I mean, for me, it came out of nowhere. Like, I know it had some press, but I was like, okay. And then it came out and played it, and it's beautiful. I mean, that team, I think, put together every piece that they had learned from every other game before it and just nailed it while doing something new. I know that's vague as anything, but if you haven't played it, check it out. I mean, I think it's current. Well, it won't be anymore, but it went on sale often. And if you can find it, full price is worth paying. If you find it on sale, impulse buy it. Just buy it.
Well, I mean, we've talked about it before, but certainly one of the big statements that comes out of 2012 is the rise to acceptance of the indie game experience, which allows games such as that one to have one thing that it does, but it does really, really well and catches people's attention.
Yeah, and if we're going with the Mattis Doctrine to separate...
The Mattis Doctrine?
Dun, dun, dun.
This will be in history books 50 years from now. the Mattis Doctrine. I remember when they established that at the United Nations Conference of 2014.
It was several score years ago.
Yeah.
They were in The Hague.
So, defining, of course, the Mattis Doctrine as separating games out by price point. I would throw into that mix a game that I haven't heard anybody else bring up, but was certainly one of my favorite downloadable games of the year, and that is Dyad.
Dyad, yeah.
Trials HD this year.
You know
also?
What? I'm buying Dyad tonight because if you're PlayStation Plus, this will be too late for you guys to know, but at PlayStation Plus, it's been on sale for like half price.
I loved the experience of playing Dyad, and that is exactly the thing you just mentioned, which is doing one thing, doing it really well.
Smashing it.
And going
just totally smashing
so far
it.
Down the rabbit hole of exploring what this one mechanic can – variations on that one mechanic.
Yeah,
and
and
it's
never
so cool.
Overstaying its welcome because it doesn't need to pad out a $60 boxed retail game where they find their fun and they hit it and you love it and you're done.
Plus, it's like the closest thing to doing drugs without actually doing drugs that's out there right now. So
it is a trip experience.
Heyo.
Yeah.
So on top of Dyad, I would say that one of the ones that I'm also struggling with where to put it within my list is FTL.
Oh,
FTL for me was like this experience this year that was so amazingly fun and well thought out. And
ironically, these are all games that were in my pre-show vid. I did a little my favorite indie games of.
FTL really connected for me because it really, although the mechanic of it wasn't the Starship Bridge simulator I thought would do this, it was the game that really finally connected with the whole, like, I want to be Captain Picard.
Although you should keep your eye on Star Command, which is an iOS title that's coming out, which is basically that. It's like
multiple users, right? Each person on their own iPhone.
That's what I understand. It's a Star Trek-like bridge thing like FTL, except you're like moving
it's already
your individual
out, isn't it?
I don't think it is.
I think it's just out or it's out recently.
Oh, if I missed that, I think it's out. Okay, I'm gonna have to
regardless.
Looks great.
The thing about FTL that then worked beyond that was that the translation of making those decisions, which is the cool thing, is it's one thing to make the decisions, but then you want to have like the feedback to having made the decisions.
Right, right.
And the feedback to having made those decisions was right there in the game engine. You know, there was a series that was popularized for a while in sci-fi called Farscape. And Farscape actually had a game that was reasonably decent also at like casting you into the world of the game and having you get to live out those experiences. Mm-hmm. And I'm not putting it forward here as a great example of making decisions and then tactically seeing them, just the game element of it, of you watch shows and you get this idea in your head of like, what would it be like if I was in that cast position? Like, what would it be like if I was the captain of a starship? Or what would it be like if I was inside, you know, Far Cry or whatever it would be, or not Far Cry, Farscape. And then you suddenly get that. And FTL did that for me, even though it was really abstracted, because the Diablo roguelike sort of game mechanic is simplified. It's not like stunning graphics. Mm-hmm. It's just very simplified, but it really captured that emotional investment that
yeah, it's your ship.
That immediacy.
And you're like, I gotta explore and survive. And like, yeah, you get very attached.
And you really literally get that moment where you're like, do I send that guy in there where there's a fire and not oxygen and he's going to be damaged? Do I run him back to sick bay so he can heal? But if I run him back to sick bay, the fire is going to spread some more. And if the fire spreads some more, then I might have to seal off some more sections of the ship. And if I seal off some more sections of the ship, then that means that I'm going to lose some more systems. And you really start to get all these cool interplays. FTL succeeded because it managed to really catch that dynamic.
Yeah.
And it does well because you are attached to your ship, but not in a way that when you lose it, it's not like playing a game in hardcore mode where you, like, if you went through Diablo and you lost your guy and you're like, oh, crap. Like, FTL, you lose your ship that you were engaged in that story, but I think everybody is ready.
One.
Yeah, you're like, okay, here we go again.
Exactly. Well, you start another one. And you're like, awesome.
And if you win, you should be able to sit down in one sitting and get through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, it's sort of... It's sort of designed that way, right?
Well, it feasibly, teases you, yeah. You can do this.
What if not? You can like jump out and come back tomorrow night.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Well, it's not a several weekends over a month. It's a couple of nights at most.
Right, right.
Jason, what about you? What's in your? What was the one that you were like listening, going, "Oh, you guys got to talk about this one."
I mean, I have a few, especially when I rank games. But like we were just talking about music, Dyad, games like that, and Sound Shapes really hit off for me. I think it had the 2D graphics, really simple. It had every type of album, really had like a totally different aesthetic look to it, which made it amazing to be inside this world and like have those people like Beck or whoever else creating those the music to match with the game. And I think it's kind of got forgotten, especially probably being tied to the Vita, but also just like in the time period it's gone by, right? Like people have forgotten. Like,
well, there was also there's a PS3 version as well.
I think it was
But I think the Vita one stuck more because it didn't come out first, and then it came out on, or they came out at the same time.
I think it was the same time.
The same time, now that
but it was shown.
It initially
as Vita,
was shown as Vita.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it hit. It had such expectations that I think it's a great game, but I think it underwhelmed upon release. I think a lot of like the demos and hands on, you thought it was kind of this limitless playground.
Yeah,
music
I think people once it finally did come out, there was just like such a limited number of albums. It kind of made like, oh, this is a lot shorter than I thought it was going to be. And like, if I want to experience more, I have to kind of go through all the levels of user generated levels, which are hit or miss, plain and simple.
They're very hit or miss. Well, I mean, you know, for me, we talked about Sound of Shapes, but I was super gung ho for Sound Shapes. But then the miss for me was that I was of a mind that it would be more of a game interfaced music sequencer than it actually is. And in fact, what it is it's a game. It's a game with levels.
Yeah, I see.
And a level creator, and you can create your own levels, and there's a music interaction there, but it's not a music sequencer that you interact with through a game interface. It's a game that you can make your own game levels in, but it's also reliant on the content that's provided by the original publishers, the original developers.
Artists and stuff like that, yeah.
And there's great stuff there. But you're like you said, again, you burn through that pretty quickly, and then you're like, okay, I've done that, and the user-generated levels are a matter of putting blocks together in different ways.
How do they surface that stuff, or do they filter it at all, or is it just sort of like you get random user-generated levels?
You can pick them. There's like a whole section where you just go through.
I mean, do you rate as you play them? You go, oh, this is a great level, like, you know, so this is going to bubble to the top so everybody can play it, or, yeah?
Yes, there's, of course, yes, absolutely. There is a user-generated content system that's like surfacing stuff that you like, and then you can apply filters to it. But again, it's the same thing of each of those levels are merely generations of the blocks and building blocks that are there, and it's not as versatile as a Little Big Planet.
Sure.
Right? So a Little Big Planet gives you the tools to... Emergent was the big word, right? But like, there's so many things that you can create with it. Whereas with Sound Shapes, you can create a 2D play field in single screen levels that you can string together. So there's a grid work, and you can apply in each of those grid boxes a level and or a area that you conquer, moving left to right or left to top or top to bottom, but you have to go off one, come on one edge and leave on another edge of the screen.
Okay.
And within those parameters, you can then apply different shapes and different sounds and attach sounds to shapes and do cool things with all of that. But at the same time, you're just pulling pieces together and assembling them. It's not like you're
more like, yeah, like the levels that are already there, you're just kind of remixing them.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like remixing of what is already been created in the first Gen Ratchet, because you can't create new assets. You can't create new music.
And to differentiate, so, like what I had in my head you'd be able to do was almost imagine a virtual staff and put notes on it and create music, and right. The music would become the level. And you can kind of do that, but to do that, you have to gerrymander all of the different boxes and shapes and put them into places. And it's not just like, I'm going to make music.
Right. Well, I mean, and that sounds like that sort of speaks to the general problem with, you know, level design or level editors integrated into games is, you know, it's not going to track the average player. You either have like something in your gut that's going to make you like gravitate towards that, or you don't.
It's a Little Big Planet
like,
problem.
Like I got in there. Yeah, exactly. I got in there and fucked around with Little Big Planet for a while. But like at the end of the day, I just realized that I was like, yeah, I don't really like if I'm going to like learn how to, you know, use a programming language, it's not going to be to create a game in Little Big Planet.
Right.
Like, you know, anyway.
I have another game I want to throw out there because sure. I don't think anybody else will. And that's Guild Wars 2.
If you've not been listening to me, I said it was the pillow I want to cuddle with all night.
I was the big eye in that commercial that no one liked.
Oh.
Yeah. Well. So I can't talk about the game. No, I'm just kidding.
So you guys talked about it in last second. I must have missed that. We were chatting.
No, I just actually earlier this segment, I said there's like one I want to sleep with, which is Borderlands 2. There's one I want to marry, which is Dishonored. And then there's one I want to cuddle pillow with, which is Guild Wars 2.
Huh, I didn't realize you were so big on that.
Yeah, it does so much. That's what you're talking about.
It's fantastic.
It's a fantastic game, but yet you were overlooking it for Terra, which is odd to me.
I'm having more fun playing Terra, and the reasons are very specific to me, but I think Guild Wars 2 is a more important entry into the MMO genre because it does things now that I think any other MMO that comes out has to sort of have learned from, because it streamlines the process and makes it removes impediments to the player in all the right ways that the MMO genre has needed. And I think it will be an important milestone for that.
I honestly think the most important thing that it does is it adds a little wrinkle that I hope many games will latch on to, from, you know, the Monster Hunter style through the World of Warcraft, of dynamic events mm-hmm. that are just happening in the world and let people come and play.
Yes, I totally agree.
Because the problem of MMOs is that if you're not online playing with a group, so we've talked about this before. So let's say Jeff and I start playing an MMO together, and for the first couple of weeks, we're playing all the time, and that's great. But then I have to go to work. He doesn't. He comes home and plays. He gets two more levels.
All of a sudden, we can't play together.
We can't play together, so we can't adventure together. We're no longer having that immediate group thing.
And then dude, I want to join you guys. And they're like, oh, you want to start level ones again? Oh,
right.
No. Yeah. Hurry up and level up and catch up to us.
Oh, I'll just...
Sort of fix to this is that we all join a guild. But then it's like, hey, I'm playing in a guild, and you're playing in the same guild, and Jeff's playing in the same guild. We're all playing in the same guild, but we're not playing with each other. So we're still just like relating, hey, I just did this adventure the other day, but I just did this adventure the other day. Well, this alleviates this, because what it does is it creates a more, and that's all an artificial world. Mm-hmm. Whereas this idea of things are happening in the world, and if we come by them, we can participate in them, and we can participate in them to whatever degree we want to. We can be like really engaged and be like, I'm going to get in and escort this person and be part of this escort mission, or I'm going to like come by and help out a little bit, but then I'm going to go on and do my own thing. And either way, we're completely involved in it is a big change in MMOs.
And it removes that you're the wrong level for me requirement, which
because you can always
needs
step
to happen.
You can always step down and needs come back to wherever you are.
And yes, it puts the emphasis on exploration first and, you know, task management second. And I think that is going to be a really profound change that many MMOs are going to learn from. I think
business side, I mean, they're not dumb. I mean, they have a microtransaction system in the game. So it's not like they are – people ask, well, how are they going to stay in business? They don't have a monthly charge. Well, because they're progressive, because they sell you the game and they get you in, and then they have other ways in order to monetize the game, which for a long-term solution works a lot better than, hey, we're just going to hit you up for $15 a month.
Well, it's great. I mean, it's a great, bold experiment. I think at this point it still is bold because will this catch on? Have enough gamers gravitated towards that style of gameplay that will give it legacy? But kudos for them for saying, you know what, we see what everyone else is doing and we're doing this and we're going to put it out there.
I hope so. It's a hell of a game. Christian, what else would you put in your group that you were wondering in there why we hadn't brought up yet?
Rayman Jungle Run on iOS.
Hmm. Apple's game of the year.
It is fantastic. If you have an iOS device and you like that, is it called Rayman art? Whatever that art style of.
Yeah, it's the really cool. Like,
of the.
Ansel.
Michelle
yeah.
Ansel.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's awesome. It's basically a runner where your Rayman's always moving and you can jump. And then as the worlds progress, you learn other things like hovering, punching. And it's not super as difficult as Super Meat Boy, but it's difficult. But for a touch game, not even for a touch game, the controls are precise. They mastered a platformer on a touch device. And if you haven't played it, it is beautiful. It's hard, but when you mess up, it's because you messed up. You can just beat the levels if you want to move on, or the real of the game is collecting all the loomies or whatever they call stars in that game, and then unlocking the bonus stage, which is like a death stage,
right. Which
is super tough, and all the levels are short enough that it's the perfect pocket. I'm going to play a game here really quick as I'm waiting in line. Dang it, I didn't 100% it. I'm going to put it back, but you kind of want to play it because you're like, I know what I did wrong. Oh, it's really, really well done, and this might sound weird to people, but I feel like it's the perfect I want that to be some version of a Sonic game. Like, it has that, you're always moving, it's kind of fast, you're collecting rings, you want to
Sonic is a constant runner on iOS.
Something, if Sonic could have worked in this game, could have been a character in this game, I think. The way it's all Sonic games for me were about speed, they were about learning your lines, they're about collecting coins, and then they're about finding the cleanest way through the level. And I think Jungle Run hits all of those notes that if this team put their minds together, I think that they could maybe conquer the Sonic problem. But who cares about that? Play this game because it's fantastic.
It's interesting that you brought this up because I think that it is a beautiful constant runner, but I think that Punch Quest is more important to the evolution of constant runners than this is because Punch Quest introduces some of additional mechanics that start to give it a Castlevania-esque sort of appeal in that you can, using the power-ups that you buy through playing the game more, stop your character, change directions, and allow you more navigation options. Whereas, you know, what happened originally with constant runners, and by the way, constant runners is just this principle of, like, your character is constantly running across the screen. It's very common in iOS games because it alleviates the need for you to be pushing a direction to move the character. By taking that out of the player's hands, it simplifies the control scheme.
Yes.
So it makes it really suitable to touch control. And what's happened is that most of those, like a Jetpack Joyride, involve moving in a dimension and then adding some kind of dodge mechanic and or a fire mechanic, right? Because then you're like doing a little more, it's a little more player engagement, and they've all been derivations of that. And what I like about Punch Quest was that by adding the different power-ups that it added to your character that allowed you to stop and then also do different degrees of jumps and combining that with a very sort of platform play element in the level design with, you know, branching paths, sort of almost Castlevania-like, that you started to get more of an adventure game feel to it.
I agree with that. I guess what I like about Rayman so much is that I feel like it was of the games I've played, the purest example of perfecting the runner, like that classic runner. And all that other stuff and unlocking things is fun and interesting and new skills, but it's not as pure of a basic gameplay where you can just jump into Rayman, you know what the level's going to be. It's all about you. It's not about, I haven't played it enough to unlock this thing. Can I jump up to that platform? Oh, I need the super jump, so I can't get it. Everything that you see in the level, you can do if you're good enough.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Jeff, what else is in your three?
Nobody's brought up Far Cry 3 yet, have they?
We batted around a little bit, but we didn't really get into it with much depth. If you want to bring it up, you really like it.
I really, really like it. It's in my top five, maybe top three of the year, maybe game of the year. I still have to play. You know, I've got to finish up Dishonored and stuff. XCOM is really high up there as well, but Far Cry 3, I don't know, maybe it was just because I didn't expect it to do what it's doing. you know, it's end of the year. There was sort of very little fanfare about it. I mean, Ubisoft was trying to promote it or whatever when, you know, right before it came out, and they'd done some stuff way early on. But, you know, when it came out, I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting. I guess maybe Far Cry 2.0 or 2. You know,
extended version.
Yeah, yeah. Or whatever. But
2.1.0.
2.1.0. Yeah. Anyway, they basically took all the stuff that was cool about Far Cry 1 and Far Cry 2, which both were, you know, open world shooter games that took place in these exotic locations. But they, you know, over the course of two games, you see them learn these very, very tangible lessons in terms of gameplay and streamlining stuff and making sure that, you know, the frustrating shit isn't in there. Like, you know, the way that they handled, you know, Far Cry 2, for example, you'd have enemies respawn regardless of what you were doing. So you'd be going to an objective and you'd get ambushed and you'd have to take care of them. And then you'd keep driving to the objective. You'd maybe get ambushed again. And these were just random events that were preventing you from getting to the actual meat of the content. Whereas this game is sort of takes the opposite approach, where the world is populated with enemies, but it allows you to sort of go through and, depending on how you, you know, what things you tackle first and second and third, you can basically clear a path and clear the island out and turn it all friendly and, you know, unlock your weapon upgrades. And it's got all these extra emergent systems. Like, there's 40 species of animal in the game that are, you know, interact with each other. They interact with the bad guys. They interact with you. And so it creates all these, you know, sort of emergent dynamic situations where, you know, you can be doing one thing and something completely crazy will happen, you know, animals interacting or, you know, joining the fray, or tigers running out of the jungle and attacking guys, that completely changes your plan. So it's very, very fun.
I felt like a real badass playing Far Cry 3.
Yes. You know, Dan Trachtenberg had the best line. He said, it's a Rambo simulator.
It totally is a Rambo simulator. Yeah. And I think that it errs on the side of the player to just the right degree. I mean, there are times when I'm using stealth and I'm like, you know, one of these guys over here really ought to know that I'm approaching, but I'm kind of okay that they don't know, because it's cool that I can sneak up on them. And if I was in this player character situation, like, I'd probably sneak up faster, or I'd do something that would have let me sneak up. So I don't feel like it's completely cheating. And then I'm able to, like, get a few stealth kills before something else goes crazy, or I'm able to sneak up on some boar and hunt them, or whatever the situation might be. And I really, really have been enjoying that. Yeah, I think it's really successful at that.
The feel of the game, all those systems, like you said, it's not exactly like 100% one-to-one accuracy with real – it's not simulation, but they do stuff that makes you feel like, oh, this is like kind of how I would expect to feel, like creeping through the jungle and about ready to, you know.
So what's your take on the developers now trying to talk about how much of the Alice in Wonderland sort of deep story that they want people to, like, know that are in there? I mean, like, they've having accusations that, well, you guys, that we can confirm, you just don't get it. You see, that whole part at the beginning was irony, and you're supposed to hate all the kids. And we weren't hating the kids enough.
Well, okay. So my take on it is sort of a middle ground. I think the, for lack of a better term, dude bro-iness of how overt that is in the game. Like, you're a bunch of Santa Monica kids or Hollywood kids that are, you know, all of a sudden in the jungle, and you're basically becoming the savior of the island, and all these sort of, like, you know, fantasy tropes that are in a lot of games where you become the one man hero, one man army, are presented in a way that it's not realistic, but it does sort of. For me, it feels intentionally heightened, like they're doing stuff in the story where they're like, yeah, you're supposed to be like, oh, yeah, you know, like the dude bro moment, like you're supposed to be like all juiced up and having that. But behind that, there's something a little bit deeper going on narratively. Now, where I disagree with, because I've read some of the stuff about what the writers were saying they were trying to do.
Specifically the Penny Arcade report, where they talked about
specifically that.
In light of the end game decisions that you have to make.
Now, I don't think that they were nearly as successful as they wanted to be in creating that second layer. I think it's there if you want to look for it, but it's really not as well developed as it does. You can play the whole thing on a surface level and not ever try to look for deeper meaning, because you're so into the Rambo archetype.
Better or less, more or less developed than Spec Ops?
Well, I haven't, having not played Spec Ops.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. The line, not the mode from
Spec Ops
COD
the line.
Blops 2.
Spec Ops the line.
Spec Ops the line.
Another reason why your game was named horribly Spec Ops.
Way better, I think.
I would not disagree.
Way better.
I would not disagree. I think we all know that my opinion on Spec Ops the line was fairly soured.
Dude, and I'll tell you, I mean, Spec Ops is one of those games where I still see people tweeting about it. And I'm like, what fucking game did you play? Like, that's my, I mean, it's people not, are like, oh
it's
my
not
God.
What, it's not what game did you play. It's like, how much did you really want to read into your game?
People wanted really to be
want,
impressed
well,
by
because
it.
Because we really want to feel good about ourselves. We want to feel like, yeah, our hobby, we love our hobby, and our hobby needs something excellent for us to put
just
out there.
Go
as the,
play Journey and Walking Dead.
Well, and
exactly.
And in
go
fairness,
play Journey and Walking
and
Dead.
And in fairness, I think that those games also have benefited from a certain degree of hype train. I think they're both excellent titles, but like... And less so than certainly than Spec Ops the Line, because Spec Ops the Line is a AAA mainstream release, but
whatever the hell AAA
I don't think people are nearly as willing to be as critical of those two games as they should be.
Walking Dead and Journey?
And Journey. Just because what they do are so excellent, but looking beyond that what they do and looking at the whole, you know, what are they actually delivering to the player, it's not quite as revolutionary, and they're great experiences, but they're not like the second.
Sorry, I didn't get into Pavement during their first album, and I didn't come into it until their second album, Indie Jeff Mattis.
All right, we'll take a little break. When we come back, we still need to do a discussion about consoles, because apparently there's gonna be some releases, and we can't overlook an opportunity to do silly predictions. We got to have some silly predictions. I don't know what else we'll do, but we have a half show to go, so stick around and Weekend Confirms 2013 preview show. We'll be right back.
He called me babe, big baby, all night long. Used to hold and kiss me till the dawn. Then one day I awoke and he was gone. There's no more babe, baby.
That is a sweet tune. That bass line.
Pour one out. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. When I listen to that, I just want like some
so fucking awesome.
Nice.
You need a lady.
Nice lemonade.
A fucking lady is what you need.
Down, nice sunset, relaxing cigar.
All right, so January still has not started. I think we still have time to talk about Game of the Year, and we've done a great deal of discussion. It's going to be interesting to see where the Shaq News vote goes. How about we table that and come back to it mid-January?
Love it.
Good with that?
Love it.
Anybody disagreeing? Because I still want to talk about some other stuff that's coming up. Like, this is a fun time. It's a fun time. You think about New Year's. We looked back at 2012. So, first of all, how many fucking awesome games are there in the early part of 2013?
It's too many awesome
games. I just want to, like, lay this out. So, we talked about Ni No Kuni, which people, like...
I'm so
God,
excited
I cannot
for that
wait
game.
For that game.
Me too!
Exactly. So, by the way, all you haters who misinterpreted, we here on the show are all excited about it. We were just not convinced it was going to be a big commercial success. Right. Commercial success? I don't know. Everybody who's a core gamer, hell yeah, you should be excited about the game. But in addition to that, you've got the new Devil May Cry, and you've got in February, Dead Space 3.
Dead Space 3.
Me.
No, yeah, what? Yeah, that's no, all right. No. Yeah. Have you played the co-op?
No.
Wait, listen.
Girlfriend, no.
Hey. Let's focus for a second.
Hey.
Mr. Kanata,
are you listening to me?
The new co-op demo? Have you been to a preview event where you played the co-op demo? Is that a yes or a no?
It's a yes.
You were not impressed.
It takes a lot to impress.
I'm much more excited
Kanata.
About Crysis 3.
Okay, listen. There's
Crysis
two fundamental schools of thought about the new Dead Space. There's
school number one.
There's Andrea's school and the...
No. School number one is...
Balaam Garden.
Get the fuck away from my game. You're changing my survival horror game. You're not making it scary. Dead Space that I love. That's school number...
It's an action game now. Live with it.
School number two is, hey, I love this new co-op experience. It doesn't change the core franchise, which is the fact of the matter. Like, if you're a Dead Space fan and you've played Dead Space, the addition of co-op does not change the game, the core game experience for you. Everything that they've added is optional.
All right,
just like
lie.
People were all up in arms about, Mass Effect 3 is adding multiplayer. This is bullshit. I can't believe they're changing my game.
Hold on.
Blah, blah, blah.
Hold on. Hold on. Bring it back.
This firecracker over here.
People made those comments. They did.
People made those comments. You understand? Like, people said this thing about it. They said multiplayer is going to change Mass Effect 3 entirely. And it's not the same, guys. Right. It's just not the same.
No, for real. Like, lots of people were up in arms about that, but we're not talking about Mass Effect 3. We're talking about Dead Space 3.
Exactly.
Right, time out.
You are changing a game.
Time out. Jason, what were you going to say?
All right, I'll say this one thing. I did not know very much about Dead Space 3, all right? From what I know about Dead Space 1, Dead Space 2, first of all, you guys should know about me. I don't play around with scary shit. Don't fucking like it
me
at
neither.
All.
Me neither.
Okay? Amen.
Signs is a fucking great movie. Well, actually, rephrase. Signs fucking sucked at the movie, but those aliens fucking scared the shit out of me. So if you know Signs scares me, I didn't play it in Dead Space. But knowing that Dead Space 3 has co-op in it makes me way more likely to play the game, because then I can go on with someone who's got balls bigger than mine, and I can play with them and be like, oh shit, something fucking popped on the screen. You shoot it. I'll just watch behind you.
And you know what's interesting about you saying that is that I felt the same way, and what's really cool about the co-op is that actually in the co-op experience...
Yo, I'm a pussy. Pull me along with you, please.
Hold on.
Black people don't fucking play around with that shit, okay? We don't play around with that shit. Y'all seen the old school video, you know, homeboy trying to scare, popping out the trash can, scaring the black guy. You punched you in the face with that bullshit.
That's an old Eddie Murphy routine where he's like, oh, this is a lovely house. Get out. Oh, it's too bad we can't stay.
I'm not gonna lie. Look, I play around with race a lot, and I think it's fun. Fuck racism, all that other shit. But, like, when it comes down to it, Dead Space is a game for crazy ass white people who like to do crazy ass shit. It's all the movies you see. Me, it's not up to me. But if I could sign up with a friend and watch my friend die, and I can just survive and, you know, rephrase
right,
like
but
that,
that's what's so unique and I think really great about what Dead Space is doing with co-op is, and he can't get over it, is that what each player sees on the screen, there are situations where it's different. What John Carver has seen versus, you know, what Isaac has seen is different on screen. And I think that's a really unique kind of experience to do with co-op, is to say you're going to do this shared collective experience, but each player is going to have a different experience in co-op, but you're going to get to do it together.
And my response to that is...
But what about all the stuff they're doing with the weapon crafting? I think that's really cool too.
I hope I'm wrong. I'm just so not interested.
I think you're wrong, Kanata.
Jeff, what'd you think of Dead Space 2? Yeah, that's how I felt, and that's why I think DS3 doesn't really interest me.
Not excited.
Like, one was amazing, but two really burned me pretty bad. And
give me Crysis 3. I'll take that game instead.
What about Aliens, Colonial Marines?
You know, I can go either way on that one. I feel like it could really be... I think that's the game that benefits the least from its time release time, because I think it's going to get overshadowed by a lot of this stuff.
Benefits the...
I think it gets hurt the most, is what I mean to say. I said that backwards.
Okay.
They're doing it no favors by.
But I think
the
question for me about Aliens, Colonial Marines is: does it find a way to tap back into the love for Aliens, or does it thud and sort of fall into the Aliens versus Predator bullshit?
I think it does not. And I'll tell you why.
It hasn't come out yet, so we can't really establish that yet.
I did not mean to cut you off.
Ladies first.
Well, okay.
Tell me why I'm wrong.
And Prometheus came out in the meantime.
I will say that I was privileged enough to sit in on a panel during New York Comic Con when...
Privileged.
I was. I felt really glad that I got to be there to see, you know, Lance Henriksen with Mikey Newman and Rainn Pitchford.
Who are these people?
Lance Henriksen is an actor who
was
Bishop, in the films.
I just wanted you to explain.
Well, and Mikey Newman's like the head writer at Gearbox, and obviously Randy Pitchford is the, president of the company. And they had a panel, and there were some other people on the panel as well who were talking about the experience making Aliens and sitting in and doing consultations with Ridley Scott about making this the canonical follow-up.
Yeah, they said the same shit about the Avatar game.
No. Well,
they say the same shit about every game.
Okay,
they say the same shit.
I don't know about Avatar, but all I'm saying, I saw the game, and I played the game, you know, at this event. And I think that from what I saw, multiplayer is a whole other story, which I don't want to get into right now. But for single player, I think it's a really interesting experience. And we know from Borderlands that Gearbox knows how to do four player co-op.
What's the interesting part of the experience,
Jeff? I think it's worse than what you're describing. I think it's not only can they achieve that. I think it's do Aliens fan. How much of the core nugget of Aliens love is still alive after Prometheus?
I don't know. Answer me this question.
How much is still there? I think there's a genuine case to be made that like people look back now and they say, you know what, Alien was good. Aliens 2 was amazing. Aliens 3 was garbage. Aliens 3 Resurrection was...
Well, the kids even was, know Aliens? Do they even know
that's, it? That's right. If they even know it. And, but then the but fans are like, Aliens Resurrection was... It was okay, I guess, if it bounced along. Prometheus was a cool sci-fi flick, but had a lot of weaknesses, a lot of like missteps.
But this isn't like a film, regardless, it's trading on
the property.
But what I'm saying is like it hits those things that the fans, the hardcore fans, are going to pick up on. What's great about it is like a lot of games that like appease the general, but also hit the hardcore, is that like you get those little tidbits of information that you would only know if you're a diehard fan. Like when you're inside the Sulaco and you see details that you would only know, like, oh my God, they're in the room, you know, where Ridley was, and the, you know, the face grabber, like, you know, like the
but over and above the, over and above the IP and over and yes. above the people that you saw talk about it, what's mm-hmm. interesting about the game? What's because you know why? Because every single first-person shooter that's ever been made that's science fiction has ripped off Aliens, the movie, anyway. Every single one. They're all influenced by that film.
To some degree, possibly.
All of them. So tell me what's interesting
all
about...
All of them. It's a, I'm Jeff telling you, it's a Drew fact.
I'm sorry. I'm being hyperbolic, but...
But to a degree, there's a great deal of, coverage.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. So tell me... What's interesting about, you said you've played it, what's interesting about the game over and above the IP?
Well, that's a fair question, absolutely, and I will honestly say that the IP is a really big draw for that particular game. When you're talking about pure gameplay mechanics, I haven't played enough of the game to give you a complete analysis of what I think is why it's better than anything else, and in all honesty, I'm gonna say you're right. Like, a lot of my excitement for this game relies on the IP.
Is IP based? So do you see?
And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing.
I don't either. But do you see where my argument's coming from?
Yes,
the thing is,
I don't think your argument
holds up because the game doesn't take place in the, you know, Prometheus era of the franchise.
I understand that. I'm just saying that Alien is so far. Alien and Aliens are so far in our media history now. They're so far back there that it gets increasingly difficult to reignite that spark. It gets increasingly difficult to put kindling on that and say, that was really awesome, and here's more of it.
Well, the thing that I think is problematic is that Space Marines, the concept, the modern sci-fi concept of a Space Marine, for all intents and purposes, was solidified by James Cameron with that film. Every Space Marine you've ever played in a video game, from Marcus Fenix to fucking Quake, any little bit of armature and framework, a big heavy gun with 30 millimeter cannon shit underneath you. So there's nothing particularly interesting about it being that exact movie, because we've already had that experience. We've already fought little fucking aliens and big fucking aliens, and yes, now we've got the H.R. Geiger aliens, which is cool, but I unless the game itself is really damn good, which I'm hoping, but
you know, the game I've always wanted, by the way, on this subject is I've always wanted and continue to want the Starship Troopers the book video game.
The movie's good too, but
the movie is good, but the movie is like not true to the Heinlein source material at all. I mean, the source material about the guys in the orbital dropships who are working for the Federalist government, like dropping in on planets, like that's some crazy cool stuff,
right? But you're talking about a book that was written in the 60s.
Okay.
You know, so it's like if you're talking about not culturally relevant, you know.
But you know what? Here's the deal: is I don't know that it has to be culturally relevant as much, because there's still a underlying social lesson current there, and there's still some really cool sci-fi there. I mean, there are these guys who drop from suborbital deployment, and then they bound across these planetoids in crazy battle armor doing, you know, like, yeah, they're badasses.
Like, this sounds like Halo to me. I'm sorry. It just sounds like Halo.
Well, actually, I think, I think the Spartans may draw from that. Yeah. I think the Spartans may draw from that. And Halo, and Halo 4 was a hell of a game.
We're getting an Ender's Game movie, so I hope there's an Ender's Game video game that comes out.
So do I need to read Ender's Game?
Yes.
Really? It'll be a really awkward title for a game, though. Ender's Game, the game.
Ender's Game game?
Yeah. Like, actually,
did you get to the end of Ender's Game game?
So, I am curious about the Wii U version of Aliens. I feel like obviously it's gonna be a port, but I feel like if any thought were placed into it, you could actually do a lot of cool things with the gamepad, just like using that screen as a radar.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeff, you have absolutely fair criticism, because I have not played enough of the game because it's not out yet, and they've only had a couple preview events for me to give you an accurate representation of what the actual gameplay is. But once it comes out, I think that they've done a sufficient job getting me excited for it and wanting to see more. Especially, they're doing really interesting things with multiplayer that I think people will really be excited about.
Okay, let me move you on to
I'm ready to see more. Yep. Yes, there's tons more games to talk about.
Let me move you on to a much more interesting controversy. Revengeance.
Oh, yes, this game.
I love that game. I love Revengeance.
It says Metal Gear, but it's not.
Right, well, especially with the Phantom Pain teaser out now, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do about this game.
I mean, for me, playing Revengeance, I mean, as a fan of the Metal Gear franchise from the beginning, and, like, I loved Twin Snakes on GameCube because of those ridiculous cutscenes with Ninja, and, like, wow, they actually turned that into a game. Like, I've always wanted that game. And I think Platinum does a really good job of actually doing that.
As anyone who played Bayonetta will attest.
But I think the surprising thing about Revengeance is that they added a lot of stealth into that game. It's totally optional, but if you want to, you can play it stealthily. You know, you could
be Solid Snake if you want.
You not all the way. I mean, there's still forced encounters.
You'd be Solid Raiden.
There's still forced encounters with giant bosses, but, you know, there's, like, these open areas where you're, like, plotting your route. And I in the second level, I think, you can, like, stay on the high ground and avoid combat altogether, but there's a hostage on the lower level, so, you know, you can sneak up behind the guy, kill him, you know, save the hostage. If you're not stealthy, that hostage gets killed instantly. And so there's, like, they actually sort of encourage you to think in a sort of Metal Gear way. And Ozzy for Shaq News did a really great interview where he's like, wait, so how did, like, why did you guys add stealth all of a sudden to this action game? And they're like, well, you know, it sort of gets boring after a while, you know? Hmm. They were, like, really? they were pretty frank about it. Like, you know, the cutting mechanism's, like, cool, but, like, you can't sustain an entire game on that. I think
you know what's interesting is that was the concern 3 or 4 years ago. Was like, can you sustain an entire game around just I'm going to slice watermelons in three or four
directions?
And
that's why it got canceled. That's why Kojima Productions couldn't do it, you know? That's why the game got canceled and moved to a different developer. But from, like, I'm, like, interested by all these, like, new elements that they haven't really shown too much of before. But just the combat is so much fun because, I mean, I'm a pretty big fan of Platinum games. And there's no block button. That's, like, such a cool decision, I think. Because the only way you block in that game is to parry. So you always have, it's a very offensive game, not, you know, morally or as, you know, like that, but it's, you know,
it insults your mother.
So offensive.
Offensive. Offensive. Right?
It is, yeah.
Offensive? Is there a difference?
I don't know.
One repels bugs.
Okay. But, I mean, it is very violent, you know, I guess that can cause offense, but, you know, I think it feels like a Metal Gear game. Like, it has the story of, like, a crazy Metal Gear game, so, like, I think Metal Gear fans should sort of be into it, actually.
I don't understand why I'm the only one that seems to be flipping out over Crysis 3.
No, it looks. Did you see the new gameplay trailer that came out recently?
I think Crysis 2 burns me.
I think we can answer this.
Crysis 2 is fantastic.
Who around the table played Crysis 2?
I fucking love that game.
Okay, I haven't played it, and I've been knocked a lot. I know I need to play it. Jason hasn't played it. Andrew, you play Crysis 2. What's your take on Crysis 2?
I thought it was a fantastic game. I thought it was a really overlooked game.
Why are you not excited about Crysis 3?
It's not that I'm not excited. I just feel like I mean, I don't want to say more of the same because clearly they're doing different things, and the CryEngine always looks so beautiful. And the gameplay, and like I said in the newest trailer that came out not that long ago, really looks fantastic. But I don't know. There's just something about it that just seems a little bit more of the same for me. Like, because Crysis 2 was so great, I just don't think that they're doing so much different. And I completely attribute...
Well, maybe it's more like they don't have to do very much.
Right. Well, I mean, that's
when
also
I played
the thing,
it, like,
too,
the
right?
The coolest thing was doing the, you know, camouflage... I don't know.
The nanosuit ability.
The nanosuit, yeah, right. Yeah. That was super dope, but... At the same time, like, that's honestly, that's the only thing I remember from the game. Like, oh, I had this really cool suit, and
two?
I got to kill. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Man. That, ending of that game is so great.
I hated, like, the level design of two. I mean, especially, so awesome. I feel like the stuff that I loved about the original Crysis just didn't get translated into Crysis 2. And for me, Crysis 3 feels like just another Crysis 2, which for me just wasn't what I was looking for in a Cry game, you know? Mm-hmm.
But Jeff, what makes you so excited about it?
I think Crysis 2 for me was one of the top two or three shooters the year it came out, and it just where you went in that game. I know it got to be a little bit predictable, but it was these series of arenas. Basically, you would get into an arena and you would figure out how you wanted to take down all the guys in that little arena, and you could use all the tech. You know, you could sort of tag guys and plot it out and figure out which portion of stealth you wanted to do, which portion of sort of overpowering them, and which portion of shooting you wanted to do. And I just had such a blast playing in those little encounter playgrounds. You know, there's just these set encounters of guys, and it built in a lot of different ways that you could take them all down. And I just felt overpowered all the time, which is a really fun feeling. And then where the narrative goes, like fighting through New York City and how big it gets at the end is... It's awesome. I really dug that game, and I'm so excited for the third one. I think it's going to be great.
So there's a couple of other, you know, games we've heard of before coming out in the beginning of 2013. Like
just a couple.
Like Bioshock Infinite.
Game of the year. Game of the year 2013.
So you say
I
that.
I don't know. There's this game in May that's coming out.
Oh,
it should be pretty
Last of
fun,
Us,
I
talking
think.
About Last of Us.
You say that?
And GTA 5.
yeah, GTA 5, Remember Me, I think it's also coming out in May.
So. You know what? You joke about that. I am super stoked for Remember Me, and I know I'm like the lone person who is like
you
super
are not,
stoked.
You are not
you being ironic.
You are not lone.
No, I was,
am I not?
No.
He just said, I was just countering like, oh, big games in May, you mean Remember Me and Grand Theft Auto? Like, I mean, like... Wait, there's another game?
Every time I bring up Remember Me, people joke about it. I mean, what got me about Remember Me is there's something about the cyber art style, like the cyber world art style plus Tomb Raider-y sort of adventuring in a futuristic world was like, click.
Mm-hmm.
I want that.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Tomb Raider because that's out in the beginning of next year as
and
well.
And Tomb Raider was one of the controversies last year of E3.
Do you remember what I said about it after E3 on the show? How I was so disappointed at what did
you hate
with
ladies.
Lara.
You hate ladies.
And I was like, oh, she was like orgasming in the demo. They made her so weak.
It wasn't just you who said that. There was a lot mm-hmm. of folks who said it sounded very hypersexualized.
And I played mm-hmm. it recently. You know, I played the first 2 hours. And
how sexy was it?
And I still don't like it. No.
Oh, you don't like it?
I didn't like it at E3. And I don't think any of the complaints that I had at E3, or I think, you know, you and I, Garnet, we shared, have been addressed at all, you know. I think
you can you should articulate some of those here just quickly.
So I think one of the big bullet points is that the marketing is sort of positioning this as like a survival horror game, sort of, you know, where like Lara has to survive the elements, or she's gonna, you know, become this hero, this like story of growth. But that's a lie. That's a bold-faced lie. At E3, they showed you that segment where you're like hunting so that you can like, you know, not starve to death, you know, but. That's the only time that mechanic's ever used.
I thought she had like a series of like safe houses and camps that you can go
yeah,
through.
Yeah, you can go to those camps to upgrade her abilities. But
the challenge is they put her into situations. They put you as the player into situations where you feel like you ought to have control. However, at times they force you into doing things that are ostensibly stupid decisions because the character of Lara Croft needs to learn from the experience. But
you don't feel like you're in control. You're like, I would never do that.
Exactly. You as the player and you as projection yourself into Lara be like, why would I ever do this?
That's what's so genius about Walking Dead is like even though there are these bottlenecks where you have to do a certain thing, you always feel like, well, I made the choice that I would make.
Well, because and that's because in the zombie apocalypse where they've set the things up, as we talked about before, is like there are so many times where they're able to create situations where there is no good or bad situation. They're all bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Which bad choice
do you
choose?
In the jungle with her, too.
Right. Well, but I think that
they could have, but they're not
just
good at
writing.
They bottleneck her in places where it's like she's going to go forward and do something.
Also,
and
you do not care about any of the characters in that game. You get.
Is it because she has smaller breasts now?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not even gonna like let anybody address that and just steamroll over that and say I am disappointed.
You let the air out of her sails.
I'm disappointed that I can already predict that they're not going to have a satisfactory progression from her being helpless girl in the beginning to being the strong character that she becomes.
Happens in the first like half hour,
which is so disappointing because I'm like, why did you even bother then? Why did you deconstruct her so much to have this superhuman growth into being like, oh, I got hit by this piece of rebar and I'm so helpless and suddenly I'm superhuman.
Wait, hit by that piece of rebar. By the way, as I've been talking about since that happened in E3, she doesn't get hit by a piece of rebar. She falls on a piece of rebar that punctures her abdomen and goes through her spleen.
She would die, really.
The torture porn that they have in the first hour of the game is like ridiculous.
It's totally gratuitous.
I think it's gratuitous, but you know what? Whatever. Like, if it's meaningful, that's great. You know, like, oh, you're gonna show her suffering. Like, how does that impact the gameplay? And it doesn't. The only acknowledgement you have of that is she like occasionally like touches her stomach once in a while, and then just runs around murdering.
And a few hours later, you're running around with a shotgun like a commando who is trained by SEAL Team, and you're murdering a ton of people.
Like the tone just isn't there, and like the problem is they want to like go in this direction, but they also want to have that like Uncharted style bombastic, you know, Hollywood action movie feel, and you can't have both. You know, you really can't.
I hear all this, and I still want to play it.
This is why Drake. This is why they did what they did with Drake, which is that they introduce Drake at a point in his life at which he's already achieved that degree of success, and they allude to where it came from.
Did with her in the beginning.
And right, and you can allude back to it, but if you start fleshing that out too much, then you start having to create the continuum. And if you have to create the continuum, then you have to create the whole continuum.
Yeah,
you have to go through all the middle part of learning how to handle a 45.
Yeah. I talked to the director about that like incongruity, and he's like, you know, like the hunting, like, well, so she gets hungry this one time, how come she's never hungry again? And his response to me was, well, you know, that doesn't make for a fun game. I'm like, but that would be fun for me.
Why did you introduce it?
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like you introduced it. So like, why'd you introduce it?
Yeah, like, you know, you're making me enter this world and like these are the rules of it, but then you're automatically breaking your own rules, you know?
You need breakfast today, Andrew, but you do not need breakfast tomorrow,
ever
Wednesday,
again.
Thursday, or Friday. However, breakfast on Sunday will be important.
I have another game that I'm...
We're back to games.
Well,
back to games.
Well, there's lots of games in March.
There are.
Yeah, and there's a game that is one of my most anticipated games. It was my game of E3. It's the most anticipated game.
City or Infinite?
City.
Yeah.
SimCity. But I have real concerns about it.
Okay.
In that Maxis is doing what Maxis does, which is creating a...
A game in Shanghai.
Creating a tool set that allows you to make your own fun.
Yeah.
And as much as I think I'm going to enjoy that, I fear that it's, you know, it can go one of either two ways. It can be The Sims, which is like, it hits a nerve with people and they just love, for some reason, they just love the open-endedness of it and the creativity and all that stuff. Or what I fear with SimCity is it won't have that sort of cultural touchstone that The Sims had because it isn't quite as adorable. And it is more practical and more systematic. I think people may find that the lack of real goals and real sort of end game type situations or anything to strive for.
Have you had a chance to play the game?
I have.
And you think it lacks
those
pieces?
I'm worried that it will seem to lack focus for people in the same way that Spore kind of did. And
were you playing in a sandbox mode or were you playing in the...
I started at the beginning, whatever the tutorial.
So here's the goal of SimCity that's very noble, and I hope is successful. The goal of SimCity is that you, Jeff, play in a connected world,
right?
and we play all as a bunch of friends.
Right.
And that by virtue of our playing together, those things that we would strive to achieve occur organically.
I know. That's how The Sims is, right? It's how all Maxis games are, really.
The differentiation there is that within The Sims, they occur within you creating your sim and managing your sim's time within the time world of what's happening within the simulation. In SimCity, the hope is that because we're now in a full generation further forward of internet-connected world, that we'll all be playing together at least with three or four of our friends, and we'll all be building cities, and that as those cities start to interact with each other, that organically, the same way cities in the real world interact, there will be difficulties that we have to overcome.
And then we'll
figure out how they work.
I certainly don't disagree with that.
I think that the case of whether or not that works or not is entirely unknown.
I don't disagree with that, and I think you are articulating one of their goals, but I think the other of their goals is that the game also works in a solo type of a play style.
Yeah, funny that you should say that. Actually, one of their PR folks tweeted about that today. He's like, yeah, you can totally play the game. You can set it up for a closed network and right. You can play by yourself. But I don't think that's where I think the game design is focused on playing in a connected world.
Like I said, it's one of the games I'm most looking forward to the entire year. It's a game that I've been dreaming about for a long time, and the game as I've played it so far at the events that I've been to is extremely exciting. I just worried that it will not catch on and will...
It's SimCity, Jeff. It's going to catch on.
I hope so.
It's going to catch on.
Legos don't have an end game and people seem to like them.
And Minecraft, right?
Yeah.
All right. We did not mention BioShock Infinite, but if you'd like to read up more on that, we will have the next issue of GameQ out for free on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices anytime now, with an interview with Ken Levine, who talks about the political and sociological implications of what they're doing in BioShock Infinite.
And his inspiration as a writer. I thought that was, really interesting.
Some cool stuff there. Yeah. And when we come back on the other side of this to wrap things up, we will talk about the upcoming, we hope, console announcements for 2013, and Jeff Cannata's wild and crazy 2013 predictions. So stick around.
We'll all have raccoon tails.
Raccoon tails? Oh my God, we're going to fly.
That was 2012 with Mario games.
We'll be right back. Wrapping up 2013 with a big weekend confirmed. Thank you going out to Raj in Australia.
Yeah.
For whom we have to thank this Cooper's Brewery Sparkling Ale all the way from Australia.
Delicious.
It is really good.
It is fantastic stuff.
I'm a few bottles in.
Yeah, it is fantastic stuff. Thanks very much, Raj. Much appreciated. And by the way, next week coming up on the show, I have no freaking idea because it's 2 weeks from now. But we'll do something.
It's a whole other year, man.
It's 2013.
The mystery show.
Hell, we might not even be here ever. Jeff Cannata will be here. I'll be here. And then week after that, I'm in CES. I'm going back to CES.
Going back to CES.
Yeah.
What are you? Oh, you're doing iOS type stuff or yeah.
Although I am going to make, I'm going to go out of my effort to try and find your partner in crime for destroying shit.
Molly.
Of course.
She'll be there.
She and I have been talking for years about doing a car show.
Oh, really?
It's been going on for 7 years.
She just did some car segments.
She does car segments, right? But we need to do a car
show. She just did one. It was good.
Always good stuff. All right. We're going to wrap this up with, you know it. Prognostication.
The prognosticator of prognosticators.
So I'm going to kind of leave this thing open to you guys. What do you want to talk about? I think that we all sort of have ideas about what Orbis, whatever the hell it's going to be, PS4.
New consoles!
New consoles, probably going to be announced this year, I think. Yeah, it's good.
It's time.
Probability is there. By the way,
you heard it here first. Wii U 2. I kid.
Okay, so since you joked about that, let me ask you this question. Do you think, how much do you think, Jeff Cannata, the Wii U will either benefit by being early or be drugged down by being part of the old generation?
Well, I think it's benefiting a little bit right now, but I think it's in its own little world.
Bubble?
Yes, its own little bubble.
It's in Neo Tokyo.
You remember the Dreamcast?
I don't really.
It's thinking.
In terms of when it launched compared to.
But I can still use my Blaze. I can still use my Blaze and hook my Dreamcast up at 720p to my monitors.
Yeah. I think the Wii U is. It's more about in when it was released in proximity to the Wii. I really do think
I can agree with that 100%.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's its competition.
I don't see the Wii U competing with any other consoles coming out in the next generation. Like the Wii U will live and die on its software. Just like every other console
just
does
like
too.
Every other Nintendo console.
But it will really live and die on
first party software.
On its first party software. Like at that, yeah. Like it'll be interesting to see what people do with a gamepad, but right now I don't have one. And only thing that's like even remotely making me think about it is just hearing about Zombie U. Yeah. Outside of that, I don't really know what they have.
Here's what needs to happen in E3 for Nintendo. They walk out on stage and they go, guess what, motherfuckers?
We got games, right?
Mario, in a way you've never seen him before. Not 2D. On your pad in a weird-ass way.
Or
fucking
Zelda.
Metroid. Look at it, bitches.
Are you the Zelda guy that writes Reggie's scripts?
Yeah.
Okay, I knew it.
Check it out, Zelda. Not this year, but it's coming. And look, we got more stuff about it.
Bold prediction. The Wii U will not have a good year in 2013. None of those great games, even though they will come out, will do enough to, quote-unquote, save the console, and Internet will start panicking, saying, "Is Nintendo doomed?"
But it
doesn't
Christian, matter. Hold on.
So let me ask you, Christian. So are you saying that you do not think that in the calendar year of 2013, that Nintendo will have a major first party release?
No, they will, but I don't think it will be enough to get the system to a mainstream level of consciousness or into that discussion of.
It is already.
Yeah, I don't know.
My 8-year-old nephew was like, "Oh, I want a Wii U."
Best Buy I was at last weekend in San Diego, they had a guy outside with a spinner saying, "We have Wii Us."
What does that mean to you?
It means, fuck, we got to sell these Wii Us. It's before Christmas and we still have Wii
I feel
Us.
Like that means other places people don't, advertise, but we do.
There are people who are advertising iPhone 5s, and that was a hard thing. You have something that's hot.
But they're not outside of the store with a spinner.
They're on television with ads.
Well, that's different.
Listen, nobody's arguing that a spinner isn't pathetic.
I think there will be some good experiences on the system. I don't think this is, again, bold prediction. Shit on me all you want. And say okay. I hate Nintendo. This is fine. I don't think that if you are a... Hardcore is a weird word to use, but if you are a dedicated gamer, if you enjoy gaming, I don't think you will miss out on much and feel like you've missed much if you never, ever, ever play any Wii U game.
Do you feel like that was the same thing?
Whoa, hold on.
Do you feel like that was the same thing with the Wii? Can you say the same thing about the Wii?
Yes.
Well, then I think that gives a listener a barometer as to whether or not they should believe your prediction. Because
you are
if they
so
agree
wrong,
with that...
Christian.
Because I don't.
Galaxy 2, Alone.
Okay, let me ask this question. If
Skyward
you had to
Sword.
Pick this console generation and you could only have two consoles, which console would you not pick?
But why is that? Ooh, yeah. Why make such a weird, arbitrary...
Well, why would you do it like that? Why would you make it do that?
The biggest impact in terms of, like, you're a gamer and you want to experience what you consider gaming to be... Well, yeah, we have all of them. That's fine. But my bold, crazy prediction is...
I'm
going
to shoot you in the face or the balls. Pick one.
You don't need... if you're that person debating it, you don't need a Wii U.
Connected or not connected?
To the internet?
Yes.
Fuck, does it matter?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot, I think. Yeah.
You'll have the Wii U will be on the internet?
No, in your
but
scenario.
But that's like saying if so you don't give a shit about Halo or Gears of War, you don't need an Xbox.
Oh, Jeff, hold on. It depends.
It's the same shit.
Because unconnected, I might actually choose to not take the 360. Because connected, I might need the 360. But unconnected, I need... There's games on the PS3 that I need. And really, legitimately, although there are only a few games, like not having Galaxy and Galaxy 2 alone, like those were... seminal games. Those are amazing
games.
That's
what I'm saying, is if you don't give a shit about Halo or Gears of War, why do you need a 360? I mean, you can make the same arbitrary distinction
on any console.
On any console.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, which is why on a crazy prediction show, I'm putting myself out there and doing what this show
Stop
is fucking
on me.
About and making a crazy prediction.
In our defense, you did say we could shit on you.
I really think I welcome it. The Wii U success is definitely comparative to the Wii. All right, and I think what you were saying earlier, like the Wii U is in its own bubble. I know I'll probably take shit for this, but like,
Kanata's got a lot.
Yeah, I've been eating.
I feel like the iPhone
prunes
ecosystem competes with itself. Like iPhone games, they're out there, and everyone with iPhone loves them. Some people who don't have iPhones might want to get it. Want to play the games, it might not still be enough of a selling point to go get an iPhone. So the iPhone competes with iPhone 4 and all the other subsequent iPhones out. Where I feel like this is the same thing with the Wii U. Like, Wii U is only competing with itself. Like, it's almost, when Nintendo came out with the Wii, they just pretty much, like, separated themselves out from this, like, console racing. And it's pretty much only between PlayStation and Microsoft. And in a weird way, there's PC, like, making a huge resurgence. But yeah, I think the Wii U, like, I can't knock it because I think it's a really cool, interesting hardware. I think it's they're doing the software might be amazing, but I just like it will do whatever it's going to do. It's going to, like I said, it's going to depend on.
Is it that cool or is it just different? And that's
it's
what
different.
Gets you
excited. Like, it is different.
I'd love to be proven wrong, but I don't think it's cool. I applaud them for trying to do something different, but they haven't shown us what makes different cool. Like, you can dye your hair blue and that's, whoa, neat, but like, who cares?
I mean, if you say that, then, like, I consider the Vita cool, right? And it's not, it's slightly different. It's got back touchscreen.
I agree.
Everything else you've already seen before.
But it's also the most powerful handheld out there, right?
I mean, comparative, right? Like, it all depends.
Of course, it's
you
comparative.
Can say,
it's more powerful by a long shot than anything else out there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's quad core processing phones out there. Those are pretty damn powerful, too.
That. Nothing with an OLED screen and back touch and front touch.
I mean, I agree.
Comprehensive
Thank God
suite
for
of what
the back touch. Am I right, guys? Thank God for that.
Twiddling your finger on the back of the Vita is an amazing sensation.
Climbing a rope in Uncharted Golden Abyss never felt so good.
honestly, back touch is amazing for FIFA. All right, if you're going to score goals, that's the way to do it. It actually makes it really hard.
You
want to
bring
up
sports?
FIFA.
Sports is a topic actually that Jeff Cannata wanted to talk about because EA Sports has leveraged themselves into a very awkward situation. And a couple of weeks ago, a Madden developer who recently left Tiburon had a volley of tweets that just really set off a big thread at Pasta Padre, which if you don't read sports, like there's two great sports sites, Pasta Padre and Operation Sports. Operation Sports has for a long time been linked to a lot of EA Sports development stuff because they've had folks who've gone over there. Pasta Padre is sort of like the
high carb version.
The high carb, exactly. I like how you put that. And the upshot of all this was that the departed developer said that they didn't want to make a negative situation for themselves and then threw a lot of stones back at Madden, including
well,
the
not,
biggest
not
one,
Madden,
which was
but EA
Madden
in
EA in general, and said basically that, look, EA is not a place that can ever foster a creative environment, that it is that they treat games as a series of numbers, and that Riccatello, though, looking at creative properties, looks at creative properties from how can these generate numbers for us? Right. And then when really and went that, to... Go ahead.
And I think it's something you can even extrapolate as a wider sort of industry problem potentially, in that basically what he's saying is creativity and talent takes a back seat across the board. He literally came out in
large
tweets,
scale productions
right.
through a large scale publisher.
Yeah, right. He basically came out and said, we had these awesome systems in place in the game that you guys would have flipped out, that would have been revolutionary and interesting and functional, and they were working. We had them in, and they got yanked out and replaced with crap.
But were you able to read from that whether that was by virtue of the publisher or by virtue of a creative difference that person had
with
another designer?
He clearly thought the lead designer
clearly had a creative difference.
Right.
And the lead designer had a different point of view.
And there's two sides to every story.
Yeah,
but it's an interesting thing to think about, in that how much of the industry is dictated by that kind of structure, and when we're, you know, criticizing these games as we often do with Madden, for not taking enough risk and sort of towing the line year to year, how much of that is even internally fought against, and those are losing battles? It's really sad.
I don't know. I mean, the interesting thing about Electronic Arts and looking at monolithic publishers as a institution is this. That's the same organization that has been able to advance FIFA year over year through the past 4 iterations to mm-hmm. really become the dominant game in the world football scene. Mm-hmm. And they've done it through a enthusiastic crew who are really into what they make, who are really standing behind what they make and are pushing it all the time.
It sounds like the Madden guys had that too.
Several years ago. Like Madden, that sounds like how the Madden team would have been described back when they were at their apex.
Madden hasn't had that in a long time. No. And I don't know why Madden hasn't had that. And I can't answer the question
of
why.
Different marketing groups.
And
different
sales.
Right?
Yeah, if you're going over to sell to US versus if you're going to sell to Europe. And Europe kills it when it comes to
But look, FIFA's become – FIFA is way bigger than Madden. FIFA is more important to EA than Madden.
Well, yeah, football, soccer is way bigger than American football. If you look at a global scale.
But within North America, it's odd because the transference that's not happening here is that there's not someone there's not a sense of in FIFA, there's this sense of that team loves the game and wants to make the best representation of the game they possibly can. And in Madden, there's a sense of shit. Oh my God, my ass is so tight because we got to make another Madden. And what are we going to do to make next year's like back of the box? And what are we going to do to make it work? I almost feel like the only reason they have the physics engine in Madden now is because it was in FIFA. And then after 2 years, they're like, well, I guess we better put it in Madden or else someone's going to really give us a lot of shit for that.
I wonder what the team size difference is. Like, I have no idea, but I wonder if FIFA is a smaller core team that's a little more autonomous than what Madden is working on, because it was the bigger beast first and has this weight of becoming a big corporation within EA.
I'd be willing to bet that they're both huge teams.
Probably. FIFA's huge, right. But I mean, FIFA does so many things that are amazing, and you just have to wonder. I mean, it does not take long to go back and look at the last NFL 2K with NFL 2K5 and go, like, how are these features that are now going on 7 and 8 years out of date not incorporated into Madden?
Well, so do you think it's as simple as, you know, the people that are making the creative decisions at a studio level are not as strong as they once were, or
no? I think it's actually complex. I think it's so very complex of people at the top not wanting to unduly shake the pot and mess up a good thing. I think it's a deal of people within the middle of that design thing then being caught of like, well, how much do I push? Do I try and convince the guys above me that I want to do more, or do I try and convince the guys below me that what I'm doing is actually more?
Well, I think the most interesting tweet that I read that was reprinted was that he said something along the lines of, you know, them being told to have a feature set comparable to Call of Duty and saying like,
so
it's
wrong.
Fucking apples and oranges. There's no
so
way to
wrong.
Do that. But that was sort of the benchmark by which a football game was being measured. And that they didn't
totally
understand.
Messed up.
That's what happened when people that don't understand video games get together in a room and they're like, well, how do we make,
yeah,
you know.
That one's making a hell of a lot of money. Yeah. Why don't they make this game like that game?
If you extend that outward, then you do start to get an idea of how EA messes stuff up. And it does start to give you some concern over games like Dead Space 3. Because whereas Dead Space 1 was a creative license risk, Dead Space 3 is now a play on what they feel to be an established property.
And don't you think that's the fucking play, to use a football reference, the exact playbook from which Resident Evil 6 was written?
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, no, I totally agree. And this I do agree with. It's that EA has this weird ability to look at like edge cases and say, yeah, we'll take a risk on a Mirror's Edge, and we'll take a risk on a Dead Space. But now Dead Space 1, that edge case worked. Well, let's do a Dead Space 2. Oh, Dead Space 2 was right. Well, now we need to institutionalize this.
Yeah, let's sand those rough edges down and make it into this homogenous bullshit.
And miss the point. And miss the point entirely, which is why maybe we're all actually glad we never got Mirror's Edge 2, because maybe Mirror's Edge 2 would have been everything that we didn't want it to be.
Only shooting.
Okay, I would like to jump in and say that I don't think Dead Space 3 looks nearly as crappy as you guys are.
We don't think it looks
out.
Crappy. It's just where there's a degree of concern over whether it still is going to be able to tap into what made Dead Space 1
And that was
so
and
successful.
And that was my concern after seeing the demo at E3 because it was all this outdoor snowy stuff. Mm-hmm. But since then, I've read and seen a bunch of stuff that sort of leads me to believe that that's not necessarily that they were basically at E3. They're like, okay, here's what we're doing different. Like, here's a different part of the game that we're here's something new we're trying. But the actual core part of the game, they know they're not. I don't think they're that stupid. I mean, from 1 to 2, they didn't really ruin anything in terms of how the, you know, scares are delivered and how the action plays forward. They just expanded it a bit. Whereas I think this is going to be another evolution of the series. The co-op is the most sort of risky thing I think they're doing with it. And even that, you know, I'm sort of in the camp where I think if you're playing co-op with a friend and one and their character is insane and they're seeing stuff on their screen that you're not seeing and they're like, dude, what's that thing over there? And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's cool gameplay.
That is cool. I agree. That is cool.
So, you know, that I actually have more
differentiated
faith.
Differentiated co-op play based off of I can see something that you can't see.
Yeah, and I'm
crazy and amazing.
And I'm actively screaming at you. What?
They're what yelling.
The girls are yelling.
They want the boobs. They want the boobs. I want to see my boobs too.
There's a whole other podcast happening in there, and it is not rated for general consumption.
It's way better than this podcast.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen. Andrew's playing on his Vita.
As we wind to the end here, there's two consoles that are probably going to be announced this year. Tell me your opinions on what do you think they'll be, Christian Spicer?
What do I think the consoles will be?
What do you think they'll be? What will be unique? What would it take to gain your support? What do you want them to be?
I think Microsoft will do something stupid and gimmicky also. I think Kinect is going to be a built-in feature of some form or fashion. I think they're going to try to come up with their own thing, whether it was that leaked document that talked about like eyewear or like augmented reality being added into it or something beyond just playing games. And I think that's going to annoy me, but I think it will be a pretty competent system and have good graphics. I think Sony will make big steps towards having a competent UI. I think the PS Store is better now than it was before. It's still a little slow and janky, but I feel like Sony people will still be asking, Microsoft had a good live experience back in 2005. How has Sony still not gotten there? I still think that'll be a problem. I still think Sony will be touting all the things that their systems can do. The Vita and the PS4 can be just like a Wii U, but it still won't do it. They won't talk to each other. It will have problems between integrations between their TVs and the consoles, and all these system features won't work, and the UI won't gel perfectly. And I think there will be some amazing games that will come out on it. And the Wii U, God, I hope I'm wrong, people. I don't want to be right about this, but I think the Wii U will have a very small, select number of great games that if you don't play, you'll be okay.
What about the Wii U 3D XL?
Well, that's a whole nother can of worms.
I think the next Mario game is going to be built around asynchronous multiplayer.
Okay.
And that,
how do you mean?
That what one player is doing on the pad and the other player is doing on the Wiimote are going to be completely different and are going to be complementary. And it's not going to be like, you know, just your little kid can be on one of them and like in Galaxy.
So why didn't they do that?
Was there going to be a graphic on the box saying what controllers are required? That's the biggest problem with the Wii U, is that every Wii U game requires a peripheral of some, unless you can play just, like the biggest feature is, oh, you can play just on the screen and take it into the bedroom with you. Well, no, you can't. You can't play Mario Land like that. Or if you really make a unique game that utilizes the screen and that type of play, then you can't do the other feature that they talk about. Or if they can, then you need to have the right equipment to do it that doesn't come with it.
Well, but it's made for everybody that already owns a Wii. It's an upgrade pack.
It's made for everybody who already owns the Wii.
Which is everyone.
That's true. That is not necessarily everybody.
They're totally
raving in the booth.
What are your predictions? Do you think it'll be, I mean, I don't know.
I think you're going to see the strongest lineup of launch titles on both of these new systems ever. Microsoft and Sony's.
Did you let Ariel drink?
What is going on in there?
They're shining flashlights.
I like how Jeff
people.
Is like completely keeping
We're
focused.
Staying focused.
Doesn't matter. He's like lights flashing his face.
They're literally
celebrity
lights
status.
And nudity in the other room. And I'm more interested in video games than nudity and light show. I've seen headlights, but this is ridiculous. I think it's going to be the reason that we haven't heard about anything past coming out past the middle of the year is because everyone is going radioed silence for... seriously? What's going on?
Now they're dimming the lights. Well, I can do
this.
Are
they going to show us their boobs? Really? The audience listening to this hates everyone right now. I want to see boobs now. If you guys are going to do it, do it.
Come on, Andrew.
Do it. Come on.
So we're seeing some Yoon boobs.
Yoon boob.
Wow, Renee has
They
a
dimmed
of a
the
rack.
Lights, they made it all happen, and then they fucking teased. You know, anyway, here's the reason why I think that, you know, we went radio silence because these some of these, I think, like, Last Guardian is going to be coming out for the Nexus. I think there's going to be, you know, like, Gears of War is going to be
that's
on the
so
next
cute
system.
That, that's so cute that you still believe in Last Guardian.
I think there's going to be these big games that are coming out for the next system, and I think they're going to be packed right away.
So you think Last Guardian is now an Orbis?
I think that there's a bunch of games like that. Like this, that Ubisoft, what was the Ubisoft game?
No. Watch Dogs is coming out on this gen.
I don't think it won't come out on this gen.
Oh, but it may also be.
I think that there's I think we're seeing a stacking of the deck for the new systems, and it isn't going to be
like.
So
you think you'll see a lot of guns where it like comes out on the new gen?
I think it'll be more
gen.
Scalable, like the Fox Engine, where it can do one, but on the other, it's markedly better, not like gun, which
more sweat. I think, right.
Whatever.
I think it's going to be, I think we're going to be surprised at how prepared they are this time and that the systems, because the systems are, I think, are going to be more along the lines of a PC upgrade path. Whereas in previous generations, and, you know,
speaking of which, I actually think that, or I'm hoping, I have my fingers crossed that Steambox actually surprises a lot of fucking people when Valve finally releases that, because with big picture mode and, you know, with the people that are into PC gaming and having that sort of high-end, high-fidelity, upgradable box in your living room that's now plugged into your I mean, that is really exciting.
I agree with you, Jeff. If it was if it was even 3 years ago, I think the thing is that as much as I don't want to be like thinking that, as much as I want to not say that I think Microsoft will be in the right position, there's a lot of moves they've made that make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Unifying themselves under Windows 8, although it's been getting pushback from the PC community, was really smart. They now have one operating system. They have one operating system that's the same on phone and tablet and on any desktop, large screen device, laptop, whether it be desktop, laptop, or whatever else. And I think they will leverage that as they go into whatever their next system is.
Do you think there's going to be any fucking smart glass shit at all?
Have you looked at smart glass?
I have.
So
it's
far.
It's already growing.
What's really...
I mean, but I mean, ESPN, with games. With games.
I think it wholly depends on how ubiquitous the whole idea of a connected device on your main screen becomes. And it could well become that secondary screen, because here's the thing. There's a lot of folks out there who are trying to make second screen experiences through apps, and they're not clicking. Like, there's the one that I see all the time on a lot of the cable channels. I forget which one it is, but it's like one of the ones that grew up in the UK where it's like, oh, yeah, like follow your favorite TV show. And like while you're watching your TV show, play along with this app and you can tweet and all that. Mm-hmm. That shit doesn't work.
The problem.
And maybe it's TV. Like,
it could be
a reach in that
but
direction.
But I think that just on this subject with TV, cable, all this stuff, right? The only reason that second screen experience has yet to work is primarily because most people who are using a second device while watching TV are not checking out more information about the show. They're just
about
enough,
more information about their lives.
Anything, yeah. Like,
that's
they're
true.
Just enough interested in the show to have it on and keep focus, but they're also not so invested in the show to be able to drop
right.
their device.
You're shopping.
Like, I watch Homeland, and I'm like invested in Homeland.
The last thing you fucking want is more information about the Modern Family episode you're
exactly.
watching.
That's what's going on. And
that's
even though
really
the stats are coming up saying, like, yeah, second screen's amazing. Now, the only thing that I think is going to be interesting with gaming in second screen is that you're invested in the game, and this could offer you different information about the same game. The only problem I find with wondering about this is, like, the whole idea around games the past, however long they've been being built, and I'm really bad at the number of years, whatever, but you don't want to let the user drop the controller. You don't want to take the controller out of their hand.
I agree.
Now you have this other device that can literally take the controller out of their hand.
And you can just walk away from
it. Yeah. And like it may not be a controller. It could be anything else shown on that second device. And now what's going on with your main screen?
Has anyone else done anything?
That's the Wii U. You just described it.
But the controller stays in your hand.
The controller stays in your hand.
Who here has done anything with smart glass?
I have. I have it on here. Right
yeah,
now.
I tried
okay,
stuff.
Yeah. Have you played Halo or Forza Horizon with it?
No.
No.
Okay, so I have. And I actually think that it's in Forza Horizon, it's really cool because you get the map. In Halo, I feel like it's just a web extension. In Halo, it's much more like what you're talking about.
It's Waypoint. Isn't it Waypoint stuff?
It's Waypoint stuff, yeah. Right? And it's like, I feel like there's nothing that I want to pull out of the experience. Like, as I'm holding the controller playing the game, there's nothing that I want to stop and look at there. There's nothing I want to stop and go, oh, hold on, let me see what my accuracy is with the battle rifle when I'm playing.
In-game stats as they come.
I don't care. Like, that's not, like, what I'm into right there. I'm going to go check that post-match.
Well, especially if it's a single-player experience. Maybe I can see that type of stuff for multiplayer if there was fast enough and everything worked properly, like, oh snap, like, instead of showing me the stats at the end of the game.
I think
I think that's really a delicate balance.
I think what it does come down to, though, is what can I, as a player, still interact with the game world and environment outside of the time that I have a controller in my hand. And that's the piece that, like, that's just enough.
You've wanted that for years, and no one's done it well.
I know. I've wanted it for years. And it's the next degree of sophistication. And we're just now starting to scratch the surface of it.
Do you guys think? I'm more thinking like I'm privy to some information I don't, and I totally want to talk about it, and I cannot talk about it.
Oh, talk about it so much.
But look, we don't have to. Wait.
This episode doesn't come out until 2013. Yeah. You're safe.
Turn off the mics.
You don't have to turn off the mics.
It's just us.
No, it's just Jeff. Rewind for a second. It's just us. Think about it for a moment. Have you not paid attention to the way the rest of the world has gone? Both the Xbox 360 and the PS3 will have a lot of connected interfaces, right? Is there any doubt in your mind that what's going to happen with both these devices, whatever they may be, the next machines, is that whatever your user interface will be, it'll be interfaced with everything. So you'll have... And this is... It's funny. Like, you were just telling me earlier, remember when we started up this game... What was the game? Everything is wonderful. Life is magic.
Everything is wonderful.
Everything is wonderful. Life is magic. And I'm
on drugs.
Do you remember what was the first behavior I had when it booted up?
You said I want to connect to Facebook.
And I said,
I don't do that.
Why do you not do that?
I don't want shit connected to my Facebook.
Why?
Because I think I want walled garden. I want Facebook to be Facebook, game to be game, and never the twain shall meet.
What? See, here's the thing for me is that, like, I just treat Facebook as this intertwined network of people that I know, who I'm friends with, who are a group that I want to play with, and are a group that I'm interested in, that they're my social, they are my social web. And that is what this next generation of machines will be. The next generation of machines will have a good, unified experience that if you don't opt into those things, you will be missing the opportunity to connect with the rest of us. It's at some point in time you're going to have to say, like, do I want to sit over here in my corner and wall myself off?
But I feel like that's what Xbox Live is. And that's what it is.
Because right now Xbox Live is, by comparison, Xbox Live of today will be like a little garden.
You are absolutely right. I recognize the truth of what you're saying.
And you're either going to be in the giant world, or you're going to say, no, I don't want to participate.
I think you're absolutely 100% right, and I just will be dragged kicking and screaming to that.
But why kicking and screaming?
I think there's fear over how people will use that data. They'll be spamming your wall and
Couldn't one of these companies come up with a social platform specifically designed for games that, you know, leveraged one of these other, you know, sort of brought in all these other social platforms, but basically gated it in such a way that you didn't feel like you were basically, you know, opening your information up to everyone. So it was like,
so Facebook.com/games.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question.
What's the
difference? Like, how do I let you, Jeff, not feel opened up to everybody, but be opened up to everybody so you can connect with them? Like, that's a really, like, how do I do that? How do I let you be available to connect to all your friends?
It's all about the consumer perception, right? Like, because at the end of the day, you're connecting a group of people that are probably signed up into similar services, you know, or like services, and that's how you're bringing everyone together, and everybody wants to be come together on a specific device.
So here's the thing for me is I don't want everything to be everything, and I don't want one thing to be everything.
I think I can understand where you're coming from, but how the internet as a whole has been moving, there's just very little way that it's not going to happen.
They're both going to happen.
Think about like almost every website that is brand new in some form of fashion or gets any refresh. Nowadays, it's like first thing they add is like Facebook Connect.
Log in with Facebook.
But that's fine. Don't you think that people inherently rebel against the idea that when they dip, they want to dip into Facebook for a very specific thing.
And when they're forced
to be doing everything there, I think people are inherently...
I can totally agree with you. I understand where you're coming from. And I think those... Oh, man, this is going to get super in a weird tech world. But, like, I think...
Because this is your job.
This is partly my job. Yeah. But I think, like, your mentality is, like, a really Apple mentality. Hey, I want to be in this Apple world. I want to use Apple products, and I don't fuck with me kind of thing. Like, I know what this is going on. I trust what I'm going through, and this is what I have, right? You have your gaming through it's all through Game Center, and it's only those friends who have Apple phones who are like, right? Same thing. Where if you look at the other operating system, Android, right? It's completely like they have similar walled garden with like, oh, our Google stuff, but our Google stuff is not only connected to Google, right? It's like, your Gmail could be any. It doesn't have to be at Gmail, right? It could be. It's a much more open source.
It's so much
world,
better.
Right?
And a year and a half later, being into iOS, I can tell you the one thing that's hugely different and I still miss is that the Android integration across all platforms was so much better, and it still remains that way. Like I'm on iOS now because we develop iOS games, and the gaming platform is better. But look, it's like this.
It's just a different mentality.
I don't want my mashed potatoes to touch my green beans.
That's why I mix my gravy.
It's like when you're stepping into the pool, and when you're stepping into the pool, those first couple of days in summer, you're like, man, this water's cold. And you step two steps down, and you're like a little better. You step three steps down, but you know what? A couple 3 days later, you're splashing around the pool.
No, the problem is when
volleyball.
My genitals get to that
belly button.
Everybody knows the genitals is the hardest part, and we are at the genitals of gaming. If there's one thing you should take away from this podcast is that we are in the genitals era of gaming.
All right, so this is one question I have for this, like,
oh dear,
prediction next console. Are we predicting solely on a gaming aspect, or are we predicting on like a sales aspect, right?
Whatever you want.
Because sales, you're like, we're going to be robots.
No.
Wait, I said too much.
I will insert that chip right into the back of my neck just the moment I have a chance.
No, but I just think, like, what's really is going to be the, I think, a huge selling point for the next, for Sony and for Microsoft is going to be, like, they've already set up this huge platform of services.
Yep.
Services are as social networking with MySpace was huge, and if anyone remembers a freaking Tom, right? Tom just like totally ripped on some kid on Twitter saying like, oh, this kid was like, hey, why, like, you're fucking broke, you didn't do anything. He's like, in 2005, I sold MySpace for $580 million. Fuck off, right? Mm-hmm. That in that time period, social networking was the key. Now, services is going to be the next major boom in industry as a whole. And Microsoft and PlayStation almost have the same compatible services.
Yes, they do.
It's going to come down to like who is going to have – who's really going to tap the cable market? That's what I really think. Who's going to tap DirecTV or Comcast or whatever, and it's going to really become like, all right, now this is my set-top box. I don't have to worry about anything else.
HBO Go without a cable subscription. Give me that.
Yeah, but that's the HBO thing. I mean, as much as I would love that too. But I think – as much as we talk about games,
you believe in the end mile rule.
End mile?
Like who's
that movie with Eminem, right?
No.
Who's bringing you
that's
the service
with,
from the
you
pole?
Got one shot.
Yeah,
to
it's going
to
come down to that.
Dreams.
Yeah,
it's Michael Clark.
I'm not sure that I agree with you.
I think if we look,
so you believe
at,
it's all service driven. It's going to be service driven by the provider that brings you the content access from the pole to your house.
No, he's saying, oh my God, what the fuck is going on in there?
Are
they saying end the show?
She wants us to wrap it up.
She's like, wrap it up. This is a really interesting conversation, though. Fuck you guys. We're going to the wee hours. You can't stop us. You can't shut us down. This is Pirate Radio, motherfucker.
How much hard drive space is left?
Andrea has
We've
no clothes
taken
on.
Over, bitches. It's the end of the fucking world.
And she's naked. And she's naked.
Wow, I didn't know it was really a redhead.
I think, as much as, like, yeah, services. Services are going to come down and really are going to be a huge selling point, I think, in the next. Because we haven't seen huge, like, huge jumps in graphics, right? Like, we'll get some processing power, extra processing powers and graphics stuff, but what's going to really make mom and dad go buy out this new console? It's like, oh, wait, I can use this to do all this other stuff I like to do when my son's not or daughter's not playing games? Oh, yeah, I'll have this, and this will be in the living room.
That's the design philosophy of the Wii U, I think. Again.
Well, no, but that's how they sold PS3.
And Jason, to wrap this up, since we will close out here, the irony of this all is that you are back to a discussion we were having 7 or 8 years ago on One Up Yours.
One Up.
About the Trojan horse bringing the box into the living room. It's really funny. Like, we're having that same conversation. We're like, will someone be able to bring the box into the one set-top box into the living room and be the one box to rule them all?
And rescue Helen of Troy.
I mean, you know who's the unsung horse in this? Is going to be the freaking TV manufacturers.
Possibly.
Because they have been trying to do that for, like, this year's CES. You'll see some, like, oh, all of our services
are
built.
And don't overlook the fact that Sony acquired Gaikai. That was a huge acquisition.
And sadly, I don't think we're too far away from a Time Warner Microsoft, you know, partnership or something like that, where it's in everything that you get. If you subscribe,
we'll also be paying out the ass for stuff.
The sung horse, though, as opposed
Jason,
to the unsung horse.
It should be the side of your ass. It'll
be Mr. Ed.
Just be the side. It'll be all right. It'll be all right.
The song.
Okay, everybody, hope you had a fantastic 2012. We're looking forward to a great 2013. Many, many thanks. So many people to thank here. We have
I'm really
Dance
wondering
Party
if music
doing
is
jazz
good.
Hands.
Man, really, there needs to be video on the show.
Micah.
There's an orgy going on back there.
It is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. They've turned the lights, by the way, they've turned the lights off in the studio.
This is what happens when we survive and actually make it to 2013. We just lose.
All bets are off,
fucking
dude.
All sanity.
They're partying like it's 2013.
The Mayans knew this was going to happen.
They did. They predicted. My God, Andrea just did a shot of the largest thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
So, real quick.
No, she didn't.
But it wasn't the largest thing she'd ever seen. Oh!
As this derails, I'm going to do a quick plug. Stuart Nocht, who you might know as Wombat from Cheap Ass Gamer, and I have started a podcast where we kind of just have random conversations, and it's called Uninformed Opinions. They're only 30 minutes long, and they're not about anything.
It's like this show, Uninformed Opinions.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's on iTunes. You can check it out. And also, so boobies are over there right
they
now.
Are.
Nice.
They are over there.
So we have to thank James Stevenson, of course.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Whole gang.
And the whole
I'm excited for Fuse, whatever anyone else says.
And thanks so much to Imsam. Like, James has been on several times, will be on several times. They've been super accommodating and like
great.
Pretty cool about that. Thanks to Mike Schramm, who also came on.
Yes, he was great. I'm so glad he brought AOL up Networks. Puzzle, was it called Puzzle Quest?
I think it was Writer Rumble is the word you were.
No. What the fuck is that? I love
he's
that.
Doing
Puzzle
cool
craft.
Improv too, Puzzle Drunkards craft. And Dragons, where it's like Dungeons and Dragons, but improv games with like dice rolls. If you're in LA, check it out. It's cool. It's interesting.
Across the table from me, Christian Spicer.
Hey everybody, at Spicer on Twitter, and Uninformed Opinions is a podcast that I do sometimes.
Dancing around doing jazz hands in the booth, Andrea Renee.
Yeah, we have
firecracker.
We have two reasons to thank her.
I love that Jeff Cannata has stooped his low. I love
Ariel's
face. That was the best face. Just popped out of nowhere.
The two bottles of whiskey she brought with her, right?
Right. What were you guys thinking?
Oh, Jeff, I drug you down. I'm so sorry, my brother. I'm so sorry, my brother. Jason Paul, of course, from our fine friends at Naughty Dog.
Hey, guys.
It's just
follow
us.
At Naughty Dog. Follow me at JMPAUL. And be excited. There's a lot of The Last of Us news and some Uncharted 3 stuff still coming in 2013.
If you're into music.
Did you say Uncharted 4? Is that what you said?
Uncharted 3.
If you're into music or an aspiring musician or just want to get some studio time, we can wholeheartedly recommend the Atlantis Group here in beautiful Santa Monica. If you're in the Los Angeles area, look them up. John, Micah, the entire crew here has been awesome to us. They have two awesome studio setups, one smaller room, one larger room. Fantastic. Fantastic group. Great engineering, great space. Great space to do your sound work.
And we got
to
thank you, Garnet, for another great year holding the
down.
Anchoring the show.
You've been in here nonstop today, and you did not miss a beat.
Incredible.
Not fate.
I thank H2O.
He was drunk and sober like four times. In and out, in and out.
Hey, I'll say this. If shit starts going crazy, I'm going to hang out with Garnet because he doesn't do crazy white people shit.
And with that,
I don't think you can have a happy,
folks,
safe New Year.
I hope you've had a fantastic time. Be very safe for New Year's, and we will be back in 2013. Until then, this is your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it? I need a drink, Hangaway. I need a drink, Alizé. I need a drink, Hangaway. I need a drink, Champagne. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help. I need a drink, Absolute. I need a drink, Hypnotic. I need a drink, Hennessy. I need a drink, Gin & Tonic. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help. It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.